And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear here, and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU Tiefel Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. And a great one. All right, we're going to be doing a, having a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, but first off, in the first hour, we have Irene Pye. She's showing up to educate our legislators on the need for justice and vaccine reform. This is the movie Vaxxed, when it first was going to be shown at a movie festival there. God, what was that movie festival? Anyway, it's Robert De Niro, one of his festivals that he had, and they just strong-armed and threatened him and lawsuiting of whatever the heck to pull it, but it got a lot more attention and everybody's watching it anyway. So this is a big issue from libertarian standpoint. Whenever I got government going to force me to anything, it's like fluoride. I just know the government just loves my teeth, man. I always grew up going, why does the government love my teeth so much? I just, all the things that they do, they really love my teeth. You know, yeah. So we have in the second hour, James Corbett, Corbett Report. We're going to get caught up with him on the World News Update. That's always freaking, man, what the hell? We can focus on some other stuff and have James Corbett come on every other week or so. And Scott Horton for anti-war and a lot of stuff and just, you know, get caught up so we can focus on some other stuff. Because, damn, well, James is going to get us all caught up there. James Babb from Philadelphia, the LNC Convention, Libertarian National Convention. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but it's always great to go to the LP Convention when I know James is going to be there, because we're just going to have us some fun. This is, there's a lot of stuff going on, and we'll talk about that in the next 2 hours. But the first hour, Irene Pye has been around, she's a mother of a non-vax healthy twins, grandmother to a vaccine-injured granddaughter, and non-vax grandson, is a third-generation activist who's traveled the world extensively. Well, she's interested in kind of society and their psyche and so on. Let's find out a little bit more about Irene. Hello, Irene. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. I'm so glad to be on this so early in the morning.
Early! You know, that's the only way to get my butt up. Okay.
Early, yes.
This is the one thing that, you know, you've been active in a lot of things, but it looks like you're wanting to have a day, some kind of an awareness for state legislators or Congress or something. Explain to us your project and what it is you hope to accomplish.
All right. So I spent about a year observing what was going on in 2015, especially in California, with the bill that was introduced that removed all exemption possibilities except for those given by a doctor, and even those are kind of restricted. And in that same year, 2015, there were over 100 bills introduced in 38 states that would eliminate religious or personal belief exemptions for vaccines and immunization requirements, and or impose that at a certain age, a certain vaccine be given. Like, for example, Arizona has that sixth graders or 11-year-olds need to receive the meningococcal or DICA. Here we still have exemptions, but in other states they were looking to remove the possibility of exemptions and impose that. So after observing it for a while, I thought, wait a minute. This is not the way we do things. This is, you know, all of a sudden 100 bills in 38 states, that's a massive onslaught of tyranny that had to have been preset. It's not something all of a sudden 2015, let's care about public health, and the most important issue of public health is that children be fully immunized, and you know, that's the rhetoric, the propaganda, the storylines just all of a sudden massively impose themselves, you know, across the board with media, and it initiated with the Disney's measles epidemic of pandemic, as they referred to it.
Well, of course it had to be Disney.
Of course. So from my years of being, you know, participating in one way or another in bringing people together to act on their behalf for their rights, I decided to initiate Show Up Day movement. Now, Show Up Day movement is not just one day. It's the concept of it is that on one day, we predetermine this off of social media, so it's not known in advance. And I have 92 captains in 38 states. We established a sort of an ambush on Congress specifically, and we've now moved on to state legislators. So on a given day, all of a sudden, we show up, bam. Everybody in 38 states that gets organized to do so walks the halls of either Congress or meets in local legislative offices. Some have even traveled to D.C. and present the same information on the same day, claiming a voice of unity and calling them out on their complicit behavior of not taking charge of these things. And along with that, I established a campaign shame, where some of these politicians are outed or ousted. One of them right here in the state of Arizona, Debbie McKean Davis, who's an Arizona state rep, and I'll get more into that in a moment. So the concept of it is to unify our presence across the entire nation and not just have it be, you know, mom and dad with a vaccine in their child going to speak and on one single occasion and not feel the power of a voice that carries throughout across all borders and have it be something that cohesively gets addressed and then exposed on social media. Social media is such a powerful tool, and it's being used productively in many ways. And with Show Up Day movement, we've used it to, you know, hold signs that have a statement either ousting or acknowledging a legislator that is friendly to the topic and can have an intelligent conversation around it without spewing the rhetoric that's become so prevalent in our modern
No, they don't want to have an intelligent conversation and nothing unless it comes with a stack of cash. You know, I'm telling you that you're very fortunate that it's an election year and that, you know, you do your one day thing, go give them what for, and they know what everything's about. And then you're showing up at all their campaign appearances, all
Absolutely.
Their town halls, all their forums, exactly. all their election events. And you say, hello.
Yep. That was part of what prodded me to really get involved in engaging and creating it now, because it is an election year. Some of these activists are going into these town hall meetings with their camera, with their cell phones, an application called Periscope, which allows you to live stream, and putting them on the spot and asking them questions and with the camera in their faces. You know, we're taking back a conversation in such a way that it's putting them in a light that they're not accustomed to being on, which is constituents who have, you know, a well-informed base for their presentation of this taboo subject, and calling them out on why is it that this is being presented? How are you going to vote on this? Can we count on you to vote this way? What is it that you're looking at? Why is it that you're ignoring us? In some states now, in some cities, because that is just completely blowing up our territory here in the United States, and it's looking to be screened internationally as well, we put together postcards and invites and, you know, show updates, all of that.
More with Irene when we come back in just a little bit. It's called Commercials. We'll be right back.
Ta-da!
Yeah, no, you got three more segments. You know, take a breath. You know?
Yeah. I'm a Cuban New Yorker. Once I get talking.
Okay, there's a bunch of stuff going on. The main thing is there's, are you at a computer?
I'm not at a computer right now, no, because my kids are getting ready for school, so I'm in my room isolated.
Got it. There is a category on Freedom. I'm publisher of Freedom's Phoenix, which is a news website and political opinion thing. And Freedom's Phoenix, Freedom with an S, phoenixspelledout.com. There is a category, if you were to do a search on Freedom's Phoenix, vaccinations and vaccines, when this first, after Obama had just gotten elected, and they did the international, we're all going to die from some blue bird flu of whatever the hell it was.
Right.
And they went to World Health Organization level, we need five, what? Well, we'll just make six, or whatever the hell they did. And, you know, it's a national disaster of we're all going to die. When they did that, I could see what was coming. And we did an entire sign project that we knew what they were going to be doing. They were trying to force first responders, being, you know, doctors, nurses, firemen, and police, to be vaccinated. And I knew if they got, you know, the police and firemen, there was going to be nobody, you know, to protect us from being forced or whatever. So what we did is we go, you know, we're going to go ahead and target the police and firemen. So we did signs, and it had a skull and crossbones with the bones crossed in front were syringes dripping blood, you know, kind of thing, and a skull as the head, kind of a pirate thing. And it said, support first responders and say no to mandatory vaccinations. And we put them up in front of all the firehouses and all the police stations. Well, then when they sent the vaccines to the fire stations and everything, different cities, they were just sending them back to the county, say, we're not doing it. So it was a lot of press, a lot of opportunity for us to express, you know, our opinion. And the big thing, and we got a lot of news, and we covered how they're using that issue to get a national threat decree, what do they call it, disaster, whatever the hell.
Yeah, public health, yeah. Mm-hmm.
From the Obama administration that triggered a bunch of powers of the governors in each state. And it was all about forced vaccination of checkpoints.
With Zika.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter what it is. It's always the new disease du jour, okay?
Right.
So what we came across in the Arizona Department of Health and their, you know, master plan of we're going to kick your butt that they did under when Janet Napolitano was our governor, they went and allow for these kind of decrees of national health emergency to empower the states to do forced vaccinations at roadblocks. And we uncovered a lot of this, and we're going, are you freaking kidding me? So from a libertarian perspective, which we're anarcho-capitalist, anarchist, leave-me-alone-ist, voluntarist, you know, individuals, we were like, it wasn't so much the vaccine as much as the force behind it. Now, of course, I choose, without being coerced, not to do all my, I have 11th grandkid coming, and, you know, and all of our kids from our kids, they haven't been vaccinated, okay? So I am like, you know, big on this issue, but I'll tell you, we're up against something, and I'd like to get into what that is when we come back in about 10 seconds. Okay?
Okay, perfect.
Van Dyke Mortgage is an equal housing lender.
And your microphone, you're going in and out, in and out. So stay on the microphone, whatever you're doing.
Liberty Radio Network.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
All roads lead to, we're going to rule you and kick your ass and make you take shots and stuff. You know, our whole position on this has been very simple. We've done a lot of, anti-forced vaccination. I'm not even so necessarily against vaccinations. I'm against a lot of the mandated, all the cocktail of little kid kind of baby. There's a whole bunch of to be against. But that's not even really the point. I just want the freedom to be informed to make my own decision. And then the free market will regulate it. It'll eventually get into it. Oh, no. You got immunity. Oh, and you want to sue? You got to go to vaccine court. Vaccine court? What the hell is that? It's funded and created by the industry that they, you know, whatever damages that they finally, okay, well, we egregiously and on videotape and, you know, with testimony of insider kind of we screwed up and okay, we'll give you some money, you know. Then you have to go through that whole administrative process before you can ever even get into court. So I'm just going, this whole thing is stacked. It's evil. Why? What is why? Why? You know, it's all about all roads lead to we rule and kick your butt. That's what it is. You're a slave. And then they keep talking about herd immunity. Well, what the hell does that even mean? It means that we got a herd in the government schools. We got all these, our grandkids, everybody's healthy and great and what is that? Until they start going to the government schools and then it's sniffle everything. But, you know, our kids, they never get more, our grandkids never sick more than a day, day and a half. Got, I sick. You see, I sick. I go, yeah, no, you're not sick. I show you sick. But the this whole thing is the mindset that we're livestock. And I'm wondering, is it to milk us out of money later? Oh, I'm sorry. You hit 65? Yeah, and everything's starting to fall apart, and the cancer of this, and the nutrition of that, and too much sugar kind of in the vaccine that triggered the blood. Oh, my God, you're going to die, and now all your money is ours. The very people that gave you the vaccination and caused the problem is Bayer, taking over $42 million of Monsanto, having the largest vaccine seed company, GMO food kind of, and you're dead, and you got to give all the money to us, and you're still stay alive. Vaccines. I'm going, man, can it? It's like a dystopian sci-fi movie. So where is the problem? It's always force. It's always coercion. It's always somebody make you, we got a decree of a white lab coat and 4 out of 5 doctors say. And I'm going, damn, when do we get to have freedom of choice? When does that happen? No. So I'm going, okay. So let me ask Irene, and you're dealing with this issue. You would think you'd have to tap in to where is it coming from? Is it the political right, patriot, constitutional kind of the government's always after me? Or is it the left that we need to be more, healthy and not be? And it kind of seems that this is an overlapping issue. But when you have people from more of a progressive stance going, yeah, but the government needs to fill in the blank and Bill Gates money of we're going to vaccinate everybody in UNICEF. And I'm going, where's your support and where is it overlapping? What is the demographic? Graphic, help me out.
So when we've gone into the rabbit hole of where this whole thing leads, not necessarily initially by choice, but just, all of a sudden you discover one thing and you start kind of delving more and more into it. There seems to be a very cohesive, well-planned effort that comes from several conglomerate of organizations and corporations. One of them being ALEC. ALEC is a group of lobbyists from
American Legislative Exchange Council of We Rule You.
Yep, I think it's 103 corporations right now, of which 72% are pharmaceuticals.
God.
So there's ALEC. Then there's WIG, which is Women in Government, which is a a union of women legislators across the United States that get hand-selected, hand-picked by another group of corporations. Again, I don't remember what the percentage is, but a great percentage of these companies are also pharmaceuticals. As every manufacturer that you can think of, not just American localized companies. And they kind of groom them and take them on resort, luxurious events, and pay them money to create legislation that benefits their agenda. The agenda is always aimed at public health. So this public health is part of the propaganda rhetoric that does overlap into whether they're Democrat or Republican. It's a unifying, two words that in any arena, someone throws in the public health, and that's where then you get in the herd immunity.
Oh, yeah, and if you can overlap public health with global warming, then you're really scoring, get a lot of grants. Okay, so, now let me go ahead, and I want to ask this question. What's the opposition? What is the flavor of the people that are in this big, giant conglomerate that I got an opinion on? But, you know, this conglomeration of your livestock, and we need to fleece you more and make some money, and we'll pass this law, and we'll get some cash, and goes to the bottom line of lobbyists. So when you do that, the opposition is coming from what? Just mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, what?
So there are a couple of, yes, mom and dad, you know, grandma, grandpa, teachers are starting to unify, you know, those same public health workers, nurses against mandated vaccines. We now have teachers against, you know, teachers for choice. It's a very splintered group because it's a group that is affected from the onset when their babies, you know, are within a year of life bombarded with so much poison that they're now having seizures and developing, you know, encephalopathy and are then brain damaged and having to have round-the-clock care. And they're being told, this isn't the vaccine. You're confused. The vaccines don't do this. So the way the storyline goes for these parents, the first 5 or 6 years of life, their intuitive understanding of what happened to their child right before their eyes is being sideswiped and knocked over, which discredits their ability to stand on their own 2 feet and have the foundation of an empowered voice. So then we have some groups that have put together, a purpose and established a mission, and they're just scattered around the United States and, you know, internationally. There's some in Canada. Now Ireland has some organizations. It has not become a unified, cohesive voice.
Does it need to be? I mean, why is that such a goal? I mean, is it a resource for them, or it
doesn't? So what's being observed right now, so you brought up Vax the movie in the intro, and that movie is a documentary, for those that may not know, that was well-researched and is now exposing the topic of the CDC whistleblower, as it's known in social media.
Okay, you got to stay on your microphone, whatever you're doing. You're going all over the place.
Am I really?
Volume.
It's not moving at all.
Okay.
Is that better? I'll just hold it up.
Okay.
So the CDC whistleblower is a senior scientist at the CDC, Dr. William Thompson.
We're going into break. We're going into break. Well, hold on. Edge of your seat. CDC whistleblower, the Center for Disease Control, comes out and he says, hey, you know, I made enough money and my conscience got to me and I guess I can retire and I got it and I'll tell you the truth now. Willie, what's going on? Why now? Why not earlier? We're going to find out when we come back. Irene Pye.
Radio is the most personal of...
When you hear the music, 30 seconds, the button goes. There's no getting around it, okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
My main thing is always the force thing. You know, the science and going behind and this and that and so on, and they'll cloud the issue and say, yeah, but we got to, and what if, and you bunch of crazies, and you got to, and blah, 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 blah. I'm going, wait. You know, this was the rhetoric that really was successful here in Arizona was this. When the TV cameras come and they go, my, you know, standard thing was always this. I go, you know, as people, different philosophies, we can argue over where our property rights, you know, begin or end and what's ours and not and all that. You know, can the man be stopped at, you know, the white picket fence in front of my yard? Is it my front door? Is it they get to kick it in because of whatever? You know, they get to pull me over. I mean, all this can be discussed on what's really now this is mine. And let me where I think we can, most of us can agree, what's inside my flesh is mine. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going inside my skin. This barrier right here, you prick, you got some government agent coming in and forcing notions and potions and injecting that into my flesh or that of my loved ones, and by force, I go, man, that is just neon flashing, hell no. So this is the standpoint that all the other stuff is just, you know, ouch, quit it. So we're going to go ahead and kind of, you know, continue the story. I just want you to know where I'm at on this, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Okay.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence from mandatory forced anything. You know, this is I'm trying to, you know, make sure Irene understands this. You know, this has been my problem, Irene. I want to make sure that we help and we take advantage of this opportunity and such and give you airtime and, you know, we can, you know, participate in whatever. But my whole thing has always been whenever you create an organization or an effort or a focus, you know, around a movement or an awareness, sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. Every time. It's always, yeah, but we need this, and we got, who the hell's we, you know? So I'm just, when you are of service to individual activists, and you supply them with something, and it's not for them to go out and go kick ass like the movie, you know, I'm all in. But when you kind of like, well, we need you to, you know, I mean, I'm already losing interest. So explain to me, you know, this organization, this movement, this thing as a tool for a parent and grandparents and kids and so on. Or is it an obligation to serve you as opposed to being served by? I mean, you know, help me out here. What is it you're offering?
Oh, my gosh. No, nobody serves me. I have no interest in this. My aim is to inspire parents that have been disenfranchised and feel... Is the mic better this way?
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me better this way?
Yeah, no, I can hear you. It just keeps going up and down. You know, I have to keep moving the slide. So just trying to get a consistent whatever.
All right, cool. So the aim really is to get parents who have a story, who have a reality that's been neglected and disenfranchised, to feel empowered and capable of walking into a hallway, an office, an environment, and say, we are showing up. We do exist. This is not something that's just, you know, some one in a million per chance situation. And start really taking ownership of that voice that was so discredited, dismantled, and disenfranchised when their children have become victimized. And it, for those that don't have children in this, to stand up and own up to a sense of integrity for what it is that we're protecting. My children are not vaccine injured, and I am so incredibly committed to exactly what you present at the opening of this segment. No one has the right, no one, not a single individual entity of any kind has a right to impose their criteria of health as they conceive it, in any way, shape, or form, on me and the choices that I make for my family or loved ones.
Herd immunity, say national defense of the biggest existential threat is a bacteria of Zika. Look at all the brain damage that we're having on small children. If you didn't get vaccine, you're a bad mother, whooping cough of everybody should get. I mean, that's one thing. As we have lots of grandchildren going, and we see, you know, that change year after year after year, and all our kids go, no, we are waving, you're not going to do, and they take pictures of it with their phone of God. So when do they want the mother to sign here? When she's right in the middle of a contraction.
Right.
Every time. It's a pattern. They come in there. They don't do it before. They come in. They wait. In contract, here, sign this. You know, I'm just like, are you freaking? How evil? They get extra bonus points or something? Is this like a game? You know, so I'm just going, no, 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 no. See, I don't care about the science. I don't care if it's, you know, better, younger, or older, or if you're going on a trip. I don't care. The thing is do as Americans, as human beings, do we have the choice not to take government-mandated forced vaccination for the profit of blah, 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 that they profit at the beginning, you know, from the womb, and then to the tomb, they get the rest of your money in the form of prescriptions if we made a bunch of cash. This is just, we are livestock. So I don't need anything other as a parent to go up to the legislator. I don't got to argue the science. I don't got to argue the efficacy of this. I don't got to argue nothing other than it's my child, not yours, you son of a bitch. And the thing is, they'll go, but herd immunity. And what about the other rights of the other? So they're starting to go in. The rhetoric is going to be, doesn't your child have a right not to be around an unvaccinated? Yes, they do. You know, stay home. Hell, you know, give the freedom for the people to get out of the government schools and they just take, you know, we're outie. They're done. Pace. You know, but anytime you start getting into all this little science stuff, it takes a long time. They got a counter-argument. They got a different number.
The science discussion is a big hamster wheel. So one is chasing the other, and there's plenty of evidence on the side of one, and there's plenty of evidence on the side
don't
of
care.
The other. What they use, right, exactly. So that's not really the point of anything that I don't talk about the science. It's not my level of expertise. It's not something that I have knowledge in. It's something that I've definitely involved myself with because I'm by nature curious. But the point is not whether it is scientifically valid or not. That's why for me it's a matter of waking up humanity. Our humanity precedes a scientific paper that says X, Y, Z or Y, X, you know, or backwards. It's not relevant. It's insignificant. It has no substantiated, you know, effort for what is more important, which is my humanity. I birthed my children and I have been given free will. And in this free will and the life that I've procreated, I have the right to determine and decide what is in the best interest of this life.
It is so, just a public opinion campaign. I'm wondering where the focus on legislators is. Somebody's got to do it or should do it or can do it, and you'll be my guest. But I tell you where it's at. You're in the birthing area. You're in the maternity ward. You're ready to, you know, have a child. You got a daughter or daughter-in-law. You know, they're ready, you know, birthing some baby, and here it comes. And then Well, all you immediate family, well, you all should get vaccinated for whooping cough. I mean, if you're going to be exposed to this child, you're not going to allow yourself to breathe the same air in the room as this child without you getting vaccinated for whooping cough. Are you? Are you a bad parent, grandparent, friend, sister, aunt, uncle? I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? It is a money thing. And I am like, who is behind this? What is the end? You mentioned some. American Legislative Exchange Council is just a lobbying group of give us a bunch of money. And when the legislators get elected, I remember in the early 90s when we first became aware of that, I've been doing this activism thing for like 28 plus years. And I tell you what they do. They have all these new legislators go to their meeting. They give them back. Now they probably just give them a flash drive or a, you know, CD or something. But back then you would get legislation printed out in loose, three ring binder notebook, and it had all the prepared legislation. So when you're going,
they still do it.
Yeah, these communities. Oh my God, it's 100 bills around 50. I'm going, of course there is. They have, and if you, the more you get done, and the faster, and it's like a game. The more you get supported for continuing career of you get to be congressman. This is how it works.
So the point of the legislators isn't, oh, we're gonna give you new information and you're gonna have a new thinking around this, and with this new thinking you're gonna support us. It's not that kind of education, actually. It's more showing up and schooling them that we know that they are doing something that is complicit. And because it is an election year, we will do all that we can to make sure that, to the best of our effort and our influence, they are not reelected back into that seat. My congressional leader, for example, David Schweiker, District 6 here in Arizona, is uncontested. So that's not a tactic that works for him. But there's another 8 legislators that represent us in Congress, one of them on the Oversight Government Reform Committee, and all of these legislators across the United States are being met assertively with a message of, you represent us. You don't represent somebody else. You represent us.
I'll give you a little inside baseball here. Yesterday we were at the United States Arizona District Court, federal court, of election law. They're going to be rendering an emergency decision today on whether the libertarians go back to being able to get on the ballot. I mean, they've done everything they can to keep, you know, them unopposed. But we're going to find out today. Schweiker maybe have a libertarian candidate up against them to be able to bring attention to just this kind of stuff.
And right on.
And we'll know today. So this is, I'm going to the national convention this weekend. If we have, you know, there's a lot of great, you know, activism that's going on there, and it's going to be interesting. Coming out of this weekend, we will know a lot of things.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government, the real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Tuesday, gold is down $15 at $1,237 per ounce. Silver is 8 cents lower at $16.35 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $445. If you've been waiting for lower prices to buy gold or silver, this is an excellent opportunity to buy on the dip. To find out more, give us a call at 800-874-9760. Or visit us online at rrbi.co.
If you enjoy LRN.fm, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. Free. I want to break free from your lies.
Yes. Your lies, your lies, your lies. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. That's what we do here at FreedomsPhoenix.com. Oh, Adam, Kokesh, and Macy just left. They stayed the night. You know, I had to hit the airport early going to the Libertarian National Convention. He's going to be one of the presenters there. And I'm going. We're going to see what's up. You know, we're going to have it. It's going to be a rave. Go to We Are Change YouTube and look at Luke's interview with Judd Weiss, the VP candidate, and what they got planned. It's going to be a huge rave. It is the beginning of a new era of the generation next is kind of starting to come into their own. They're getting into their 30s. They got some wealth. They're, you know, tech guys that, you know, bought Bitcoin at nothing kind of deal. And they're having an opportunity. And a lot of these guys have been around, like, you know, John McAfee, 70 years old. You know, I just communicated, had an email exchange with Patrick Byrne from Overstock. He's got a, you know, health, you know, thing going on right now, but I just wanted to make sure he knew, you know, stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and he's been a inspiration for a lot of this stuff. I'm telling you, a lot of things that the activist of my day have been waiting for is happening right now. On the vaccine thing, it's so representative of what the government, how far they'll go into injecting life-altering substances into the babies. And somehow they want the parents and grandparents and people to feel that it takes a village to kill your child. You know, I'm going, what? This is, it's so the core education of legislators, of showing up, hashtag show up. Now, you know, what they're doing is to what? I mean, you know, help me out, Irene. You're there to do what?
Oh, my goodness. So you keep asking me these questions, and I want to get to all of them before I'm off the air, because this whole live thing is so exciting, and I'm only got, it, what, another 20 minutes?
No, you got another 8.6, so I'll let you go. Go.
So one of the questions you asked was, does it matter that we're unified across all U.S., you know, across the U.S.? And hell yeah, of course it matters. Look at March Against Monsanto. The reason why it's so incredibly powerful, it's because it's a global effort. On the same day, May 21st, everyone shows up in 60-plus countries all across the United States, whether it's 15 people on a city hall, you know, entryway, or 200 people in the parking lot of a farmer's market. That cohesive, empowered voice sends a stronger message. But more importantly, regardless of
what message, what message, you're going to be in everywhere, or everybody doing everything. What? And you got one message. Well, what is that one message? Tell me.
We're taking back ownership of my own integrity to make decisions for myself and my family.
Ow.
So standing for it, same way you're doing it. The only thing that we're doing different is we're saying on this particular day, we're all telling these particular people this same message. The same message being, you don't have the right. I claim the right for myself and my family. I'm not part of a herd. However it is that it gets, you know, the verbiage gets articulated in that particular
instance. Well, see, I know what they're going to do. I've been doing this for a long time. They come back and they say, oh, yeah, we'll make it safer. Oh, yeah, we'll have better, you know, committee on it doesn't hurt as much as we'll do and break it up into
well,
go a few later.
Thing,
and
Ernest.
You never get to the point that it's my choice. They'll just go, all right, we heard you. We're going to do the mandatory a little bit better. And you never get to the root.
So here's the thing in Arizona, specifically because I'm a constituent here. The Arizona Partnership for Immunization, TAPI is the organization, is led by Debbie McCune Davis. Debbie McCune Davis has, as a legislator, had initiated the amendment of language for our personal belief exemptions. We got hold that it was happening, and with the Arizona Association of Chiropractors, created a couple of discussions, and now rather than it being implemented in the school year beginning in 2016 in the fall, or in August actually, it's being indefinitely put on hold. Part of the reason for that is they work under the table, they work behind the scenes. 10 people show up and say, hey, wait a minute, you don't get to do this. This is not the way that it's done. It didn't go through legislative process. Who heard this? Who determined this? And we call them on it. We shame them into understanding that we, as the people, constituents of Arizona, know that they're doing stuff that's criminal and complicit to a bigger agenda, whatever that may be. Whoever wants to claim it, whether it's money or depopulation, who cares? The point is, we show up. We claim it back. We intercept what has been going on under the table behind the scenes and manage to, at least in this particular instance, put it on hold. Can we eradicate it? I don't know. But right now it's put on hold. The Arizona Association of Pediatrics, the AAP director, Delphus Richardson, one letter to Harkins Theater and managed to stop VAXXed from being screened in Arrowhead for the same duration that it was in Tempe. So in that particular instance, I was out of town. I was at a protest at the CDC and a rally in Atlanta, and we don't come to find out about it till after the fact. But we started a Harkins censored, boycott Harkins. We had a calling campaign. They received over 1,000 phone calls saying, you have, we're no longer going to participate in purchasing tickets at your establishments because you caved to special interest. So is it the right way to do it? I don't know. But
heck yeah. Nothing. You know, this is, so what did Harkins do? You know, Harkins Theater, we've always used, their Mill Avenue Valley Theater to, we bought out the theater before to, show different movies and so on. And so what you're saying is VAXXed was on their schedule and then they took it off. Is it still off?
No. So VAXXed was on their schedule to screen opening night, April 22nd for 7 days in 2 locations. Arrowhead and the Tempe Phoenix Arts, or what is it, Valley Arts. So because they had already started selling tickets at Valley Arts, they decided to keep the screening open there because they didn't want to get the publicity of having to reimburse tickets. However, they had not started selling tickets at Arrowhead, and they closed it down, and it did not get screened there. Within a week, there was, in the Phoenix New Times, an article, and then in Fox 10 News, there was a report that Delphus Richardson, who is the director of the Arizona Association of Pediatrics, wrote one letter to Dan Harkins, the owner of this conglomerate of theaters in Arizona, and managed to sway his opinion on having this movie screened, and it was shut down. So once I got wind of it, I came back to Arizona, you know, that Monday. Once I got wind of it, our group of, you know, activists initiated a Harkins-censored boycott Harkins campaign and a call campaign to Naomi. I don't have the number memorized in my head, but Naomi is the guest services liaison for Harkins Theaters, and just lambasted it all over social media and continue to do so with another effort. So in, along with that, they lied and said that, in fact, that wasn't true, that what happened was the studio didn't want to open it in two movie houses in the same city because it wasn't cost efficient. Well, I communicated with Cinema Libre, which is the distributor of Vaxxed, and have been in communications with them since then. I've helped fill theater seats across the United States with the group that I'm working with. That wasn't the truth. So that even magnified more.
Okay, has it been, before we run out of time, I didn't know, is it back on the schedule or not?
No, it's not.
Ooh, we get to have us some fun. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is, what's their view now? They don't want to, what's their excuse now? They go, we're not doing it because we're not doing it?
Well, now they're not communicating. So right now, they're you know, not responding to phone calls and completely shut down. So my next, you know, aim is exposing it on actual media is kind of a you know, it's blowing hot air into the abyss, because Arizona doesn't have that same sort of connection with this sort of thing. For me, it's more doing it behind the scenes. The same way they work behind the scenes, we work behind the scenes. And getting another movie house to actually screen it and, you know, continue to boycott Harkins. Boycotting a company is one of the most effective and powerful ways of sending a message. But if the message doesn't get...
Go to the archive! She's not done! She will keep going. We'll be right back in the next hour. James Corbett will be right back. Go to the archive. Let Irene continue yakking. Okay. Keep going.
That was it. I think that the censoring, I wanted to just get it out there to the audience to censor, boycott Harkins and make a phone call if they so feel called to, and get it known that it's not something that just is going to go away. We're working with other movie houses, Studio Movie Grill, the bigger chains are being worked with corporately with the distributor. The rest of it is a grassroots movement to get it into different playhouses. We're even thinking of potentially getting it back into Harkins at the Valley Arts in Tempe. Those are the kind of sneaky maneuvers that are part of showing up in legislative offices and letting them know, we know that this is going on. It's an election year. What are you going to do about it? And, you know, Arizona may not have that same sort of gumption for it, but there's other states where there are legislators that are actually friendly to the cause and are being incredibly forthright in, you know, bringing the conversation and potentially congressional hearings for Dr. Thompson, which, you know, it's just a shift move. I don't know that it's the end-all, be-all, but it'll definitely, if those congressional hearings take place, which I believe they will, and I'm not sure if it'll happen within this year, the great tipping point will have hit. I mean, this is disclosure of enormous scientific fraud in the one federal agency that all eyes turn to for guidance as to how these, you know, laws, mandates, and recommendations get implemented within each state. And one of their senior scientists is calling out the other four superiors that were part of this. You know, whatever.
You know, I need you to there's so much, you know, that I want to share with you, because we went through a full investigation. See, what they oh man, it goes deep. What they do is they created this pandemic emergency plan as the Arizona Department of Health and blah blah blah. And
it's going on for Zika. I don't know if you saw the news yesterday.
Yeah, no, it's always the next one. It's going to be swine flu, it's bird flu, it's Zika, it's Ebola, whatever.
Here's the thing that we've noticed. I'm just going to interrupt you real quick. They present these things, and then they have strategists who look at what was the response in the community, what action plan took place, what did they do, how did they prevent us from following through with it, and then the next time they implement whatever it is, the next disease, now with Zika, based on the strategy of having seen how we responded. So for me, part of it is to have the strategy of not making it so publicly visible that this is what we're doing, because the next bill comes around and they change the language based on the arguments that we presented for it, or they change the approach based on where it was that we protested. So it's important for us to also, you know, and that's the thing with the unifying, you get together, you know, activists and leaders from across the United States who have had different interactions and have had the exposure of how their public health departments and their legislators presented the topic, and then you brainstorm on what would be the appropriate method to implement without it being publicly noticed, aware, before you do it. It's a war. It's an actual war.
It's a philosophical thing. This is one thing that, you know, that's why I don't like, you know, it being this one specific organization. You create a head of a snake that can get chopped off or co-opted. And I'm going, no, there's a much more base philosophy of the whole thing. That's what this libertarian thing is, this Lovolution is all about. And it's just, look, to understand that, you know, do I or do I not own my body? I mean, it's you know, like, yeah, I want to snort Clorox, and what do you care? You know? So this is, once you get down to that fundamental, all the other stuff comes into play. And the best, you know, way to have an impact on these guys is, like you're saying, boycott. It's economics. So we, you know, as much as we would bring attention to not there, we just need to find another movie house where it's there. You know, so I'm, is there other opportunities? Because we've done this before, you know.
Well, right now I have a list open on my computer, which I'm not going to get to right now, that has maybe 40 or so other movie houses, like Studio Movie Grill is United Artists, but it's independent. iPick might be a venue. So we have to find those kind of, you know, not AMC.
Well, we used a Phoenix film bar downtown.
They wouldn't do it. They
really
didn't think it was the proper venue for it. Yep.
Why wouldn't they do it?
They didn't feel it was the proper venue for it at this time. So part of it is, you know, they're not giving a fair response. Paradise Valley Picture Show, and the one down in Mesa, said they didn't feel that their size theaters would be sufficient for the kind of demand that has been part of that.
So?
Well, exactly. That's my whole thing. So you have, you know, you have full houses with people wanting tickets. I thought that was a good thing. I mean, don't you want to have...
Yeah, no, I know the guys at the Phoenix Film Bar. I'll talk to them. If you want, because I'd love to, you know, put a, you know, have some fun with it. This is
I am now communicating with Cinema Libre, and if you have seen a movie house filled, I don't know if you've been tracking back, but Michigan, Georgia, Philadelphia, all the places in California, all of those fill the seats. I'm networking with activists in each one of these communities to get, you know, their groups within their established network, you know, whether it's yoga teachers or naturopathic doctors or pharmacists or their pediatricians, get the invites out. And so that kind of networking, so the audience, population that's sitting in the seat.
Yeah, no, the population is not going to be the problem. It's, fine. You know, I got to go now. I got to get to my next guest. But I also am going to be gone until I'll be back next Tuesday night. So Wednesday, please call me with what you got. You know, give me a call and I will help you. know, okay.
I've got your business card. And so I'll send you an email. I know you got to go. I'll send you an email just so you know when we're in communication, and I'll call you next Wednesday.
All right. Great. Thanks, Eileen. Peace.
All right. Bye.
James.
That's my name.
Okay. We're ready to go in about 30 seconds. The bottom line news. I had McAfee on Friday, and he just really pressured me to go to the LP convention. I would hate myself if I didn't go. It's going to be a big rave, okay? So he goes, if you don't enjoy yourself and think it was worth it, I'll refund your ticket. I go, well, I can't get a room. And so he goes, you can stay at my condo, okay? So it's going to be a party.
Kokesh, how did you not go?
Yeah, Kokesh just left. He's on his way there now. And I go tomorrow morning, be there tomorrow afternoon. But it's we're going to have us some fun. All right, we'll talk about it. Here we go.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, the vax movie and the vaccine of the vax, kind of, I don't really, it's all just tools for us to have an option to say, it's my body, damn it. You know, so it's just a philosophical thing. There's a lot of that going on, a lot of issues. And we're going to be talking with Mr. James Corbett in this hour. Next hour, James Babb. He'd be going to LNC convention, too. That'd be grins and giggles. I'm looking forward to talking to James Babb. But James Corbett gives us a world perspective on a whole bunch of stuff. You know, so what's some of the things that James Corbett does? Let me think. He focuses on everything. Oh, my God, you know? So, I mean, James, you know, I've been watching some of your videos here of late. I can't keep track of them. You know, tell us what's got your interest this week.
I would say this week, obviously, Obama coming to my part of the world is making headlines here and is something that people are taking a look at, especially because he's going to Hiroshima later this week to pay his respects, maybe, or certainly not apologize. But there's all sorts of politics swirling around about.
You know,
that.
We went through a Dr. Frank Tamburi got his medal. Gold degree in Japan, and he lived there for a while. He's got the ponytail kind of thing going on. I'm not even sure what Bushido or just, you know, the philosophy of and kind of, yeah. You know, has.
I'm working on my ponytail.
Yep. Get on that. You know, what happened is that we went through an entire segment of how you bow, you know, what the different bows are. You know, it's kind of a show of respect or apology or what, and the lower and longer that you're down to permit. I mean, at some point, I know the Japanese people, like, man, he needs to lay down on his stomach and prostrate himself for the Japanese people and apologize for blah, 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 blah. And, you know, if Obama, President of the United States, he goes to Saudi Arabia or something, or he goes to China and he bows and everybody freaks out, you know, and I'm going, so what do you think would be the appropriate response, or how low he bows, or if he's going to apologize or not? What's the rhetoric going on there?
Well, he's absolutely not going to apologize in any way, shape, or form. But, I mean, even his appearance, even going to Hiroshima, is seen as some sort of major diplomatic event. There's never been a U.S. sitting president that has been. Carter has been to Hiroshima, but after he was in office. So just the fact that he's going there and may lay a wreath or whatever they end up doing is itself a political statement of some sort. And I guess it's something of a step forward from, say, 20 years ago when the Smithsonian tried to have a 50th anniversary retrospective of what the bombing was about. And of course, they put in some of the Japanese side of that story. And there was such a furor that Congress was actually threatening to defund the Smithsonian for even having such an exhibit. So they actually backed off, said, "We made a mistake. We didn't mean to do that." And they scrapped the whole exhibit.
You know, who told Congress to do that? What is the is it military industrial we rule empire of kick your ass or what?
Yeah, well, there was, I mean, veterans were obviously up in arms about it at the time. Military industrial complex, of course, wouldn't like it, but I think it was a lot of politics being played. And of course, that was back in the Gingrich days. So there was a lot of political hay to be made from it. And they made their hay and made sure that got stuck out. So, I mean, the American people have never really been presented the whole story. And I live about an hour away from Hiroshima, so I've been there many times. I've been to the museum. I mean, it is a harrowing experience to think about the tens of thousands of lives that were vaporized in an instant and hundreds of thousands of people who died excruciating deaths in months and years after. It's a horrific thing to contemplate, and no one should be happy about what happened. I know there's the people who make the arguments that, you know, oh, it saved 800 bajillion lives and all this kind of stuff, which I think is nonsense and has been proven nonsense over the years. But even disregarding that, no one should be happy about what happened there.
Oh, there's some Americans wearing their Missouri hat that's happy as hell, you know, and celebrating. It's all, nuke them till they glow, shoot them in the dark kind of, you know, we love to have nukes and we're the man. You know, this is, it's a attitude of, a morally bankrupt, corrupt kind of something. And I'm just, you know, wondering, what do you think the Japanese think the American people's view of the bombing of Nagasaki and Hiroshima? You know, what do you think they think that we believe?
Yeah, I don't. It's such a strange relationship because most Japanese people love America. They love Americans. They love all thing American. People who live near the bases maybe have a more colored view of what America is about. But generally speaking, it's a culture that venerates America and what they stand for. And I think, I mean, Japan is a culture that has always embraced change and innovation and technology. And I mean, it's just one of those things that here's the only country to have suffered a nuclear bombing in warfare. And they were one of the first countries to really embrace nuclear power. It's just a strange phenomenon, but it speaks to the Japanese psyche, I think.
Well, this embracement of nuclear power, and, you know, I'm not seeing that equating to, you know, bombing people, you know, but is that starting to wax and wane a little bit now? They like, it's like, you know, no coal, no oil, no choice. I mean, you know, what are
right. Right. I think you're right in the sense that there's always been that disconnect that people make between nuclear power and nuclear bombs. And Japan prides itself on having its three non-nuclear principles. It won't store bombs. It won't make bombs. It won't allow bombs to pass through.
Yeah, but they're making a boatload of plutonium.
That's right. Hundreds of tons of it that can be converted in an instant. So that's the real point of the nuclear power industry. And there are, I mean, it's an industry. There are powerful financial and military motives behind its existence. And the people who benefit from that are the loudest and they lobby the hardest. So they win the political argument usually. There's a lot of people here who are strongly anti-nuclear in terms of nuclear energy, let alone nuclear bombs, but they don't really get a seat at the political table, generally speaking.
Wow. Tell me about this plutonium thing. I heard, God, where did I hear this before? It's like the nuclear industry is not so much about, I mean, they make power, but, you know, one of the side, or if not the goal, is to create a crap load of plutonium that's sitting there. Now, you can have breeder reactors or different kind of reactors, or you can get into, heck, you can burn it if you do thorium or something. But I'm just wondering, there's a, just like we have the oil and energy industry BSing us into God knows what, you know, it's the same with the nuclear power. They're just now starting to come into little micro reactors and smaller and different and more efficient or whatever. But that they don't produce the plutonium that they need. It gets more. I dig into this. It seems like these nuclear power stations are plutonium makers.
That's pretty much what they are. That's the reason that the particular design of the uranium reactors that are now the standard are the standard, is precisely because they were perfect breeders for the plutonium that could then be used in nuclear weapons. So that's ultimately where it comes from. The original designs go back to, I'm going to forget his name, Admiral, Rickover or something, back in the 40s and 50s. And they basically were choosing designs that could be miniaturized to put on aircraft carriers and the like, to make nuclear craft vessels. And that was the reason that it all comes back to the military. So that's the reason that we have these extremely ridiculously unsafe designs. And of course, we saw what happened with Fukushima, the ticking time bombs that are waiting to happen, when there has been, and for decades, people have known about, for example, thorium reactors, which rely on completely different technology. They don't require active cooling to take place at all times. So if something goes disastrously wrong, like at Fukushima,
with James Covert when we come back. Yep. What other issues do you want to get? This is interesting. I'm glad we got that in, because there's some other weird crap going on. But what it does do is it provides an enormous amount of energy for the next we get to burn it, thorium doing something. And then, China is doing something. Everybody's doing something. And the real genie to let out of the bottle is the American people of leave them alone. Do that, it'll explode. Okay, what do you know about, libertarian politics and so on? You been paying attention at all?
A little bit. I've heard some interviews with some of the people involved in it and some of the candidates, but
pull up this video. You gotta see it during one of the breaks. It's Exit Politics McAfee. Just do a search on Exit Politics McAfee or something to come up.
Okay.
You watch that. Go ahead and start watching it. I'll let you get going on it, and you can just kind of have it in the background. Did you find it?
Hold on.
It's going to be a party, man. It's a rave. Yeah. This is about freaking time. Go ahead and start that, and then we'll talk.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
A little less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more fight, a little less fun. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby.
Yes, that's fine, baby. Okay, man, there's a lot to talk about. Let's get back to James Corbett right away. Yeah, he's watching that video. It's not done, but, you kind of getting the idea and you can finish it, but damn. It's going to be, this election cycle is seen around the world, and certainly from Japan, as what? They all want to talk about Trump or talk to Trump, or they're just like, Americans are crazy or what?
Americans are crazy. I think that might be the sentiment around the world. Trump comes up, but probably because he's talked about the relationship, the military relationship between Japan and the U.S. and how that might change under his presidency, which is a point of political interest for Japan, obviously. Especially now, there's just been a new murder by an ex-Marine here in Okinawa, which is bringing back shades of the rape and killing of a schoolgirl in Okinawa in 1995 that caused a bunch of protests. Mm-hmm. So that's hitting the agenda just as Obama arrives for the G7 summit. So it looks like that's going to be on the table for them to discuss. So those are the types of issues that
Trump would be doing. Trump would just go, yeah, okay, we'll pull out and take care of your own damn defense. They're going to like that.
Yeah. I think actually, I heard an interesting take on that from someone who was covering it from the Japanese angle, which is to say, no one really believes that any president is going to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think even Trump really believes that, because it isn't the type of relationship, the 70-year relationship, that's going to be severed by some president on a whim. There are powerful military industrial forces that are at work here, and I don't think that relationship is just going to be severed like that. I'd love to be proven wrong, but I think that ultimately people who think that Trump is going to make a difference, even if he wanted to, which I don't think he does. I mean, they're just in for a new awakening, just like the Obama-noids of 2008.
Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, with funky hair. Okay, you know,
and a Goldman Sachs advisor, and
$100 million
funding, and all of the other stuff.
They think they got
Henry Kissinger, bowing to the throne.
They think they got it locked in, man. They're counting their money. I'm going, yeah, but what about the American people? Break with thee, and you throw dog poop on government shoes. You're done. Because your latest video, debate, do elections change anything? So I'm wondering, this, and you're working with NewsBud, Sabelle Edmonds and them over there, tell us about this recent video that you did on elections.
Well, this was a talk between myself and three of the people who are going to be at this NewsBud.com organization. And the question on the table, should an outlet like NewsBud or other media outlets even cover the elections? What's the point of covering the horse race? And obviously for me, as an anarchist, I have zero interest in it except for the possibility that more people might wake up through this election cycle to see that it's just all party politics and nonsense. But that was basically the question. And there was at least one firm, staunch statist in that debate. So there was a good back and forth there. And really, it's one of those questions that we can debate endlessly, I think. The real point is, if you do not believe that voting is going to make a difference, which I don't, then what do you do? What do you offer? Because unless you're offering something else, it's just, farting in the wind, I guess.
Well, what was his argument? You had to. If you didn't, you're going to, go to hell or something. What was their argument?
Something along those lines. I'm sure there was a bit of lesser of evils and we can make gradual difference kind of thing, which I don't dismiss that entirely. I understand it. It is a persuasive argument for a lot of people. It isn't for me. I'm not really into consequentialism. I'm into ethical principles. And my ethical principles tell me there is no magical, unicorn hat that someone can put on to become a government authority figure and tell other people what to do. And somehow that becomes right and fair and equitable when it's not right and fair and equitable for you and I to do that.
All right. Well, I see politics as, I've been doing it for a long time. I've run for gazillion offices and whatever, but I don't vote. Because I understand the power of just public opinion. I understand that there's a lot that can be done by, when you got a few months of people's attention. And usually it starts about, in the midsummer, they're getting earlier and earlier their primaries or their early voting, or, it's a mail-in of we did and it'll be sooner or later internet of just, and hell, you're just told how you voted because they know what Amazon movie you got. So I'm going, it keeps getting more and more removed from the people. So people are removing themselves more and more from politics and getting more to just, voluntary temporary alliances that have absolutely nothing to do with jurisdictions or borders, and blockchain technology of we came up with a good idea of I ordered it on a open bazaar. And this is something that I don't think the older politicians and generations even understand. They go, yeah, well, a mushroom cloud will trump all that stuff. So I'm just, what is the secret weapon that they believe that they have over the public opinion? There's something that they're, yeah, but we rule you. Didn't you get the memo? What is that? What bolsters that idea?
Well, it's the double-edged sword of technology, isn't it? Because the same technology that's enabling all this incredible stuff that really is threatening the system on a fundamental structural basis is the same technology that's spying on and calculating everything you do and is collecting all your information and knows you better than you know yourself. And, of course, all the corporations are in the back pocket, if not actually in the back door of the government. So, Microsoft, Apple, whatever, they're all giving all their information and data to the NSA, even if the NSA isn't scooping it all up at the trunk, which it is. So, I think that's what they see as their ultimate weapon in all of this, is that with that type of ultimate, total, surveillance and information awareness, as they like to call it, they have an extreme advantage over the vast majority of the population. And there's a small sliver that might know how to, you know, evade and avoid those types of systems and hang out on the down low. But most people aren't going to bother to do that. And I think as long as they get most people, they're probably happy.
Most people. Yeah. Most people.
On the flip side of that, I think that means there is a space that does exist for people who are interested in these, you know, open bazaar and things like that to get around the system. I think there is that genuine space that exists right now.
Well, you know, my thing, James,
you know, that's the hope.
Well, my hope is that these infrastructures become developed enough to be a safety net for, oh my God, you know, because it's common. So they're going to, oh, we can't buy or sell, and we don't have the Mark of the Beast tattooed on our forehead, and we can't kind of, Bitcoin, open bazaar. So I'm just going, this is just by having the infrastructure available. And I'm going, yeah, well, who's advocating for that? Who's keeping people informed about that? Mr. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Go to Corbett Report, go there, and you see all the great videos and so on. We're not done. Corbett. C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with NewsBud. You know, NewsBud, Sabelle Edmonds and James Corbett got something going on. He's going to explain it to us. Yeah, you prepared to do that when we come back? You can tell us what's up?
I can. I can even clarify that I'm not technically a member of NewsBud.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
I'm a supporter.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, whatever. you know more than me, let's put it that way. You know, well, Sabelle was excited about it. I think, you know, what side was she taking on this voting thing?
She's mostly on my side.
Yeah,
she is not a fan of covering politics at all on the site and doesn't put any faith in elections. So there you go.
Yeah, we've had her on, you know, semi-regularly throughout the years, and her opinion has evolved from experience. And certainly, I've done everything I can to, you know, provide an opinion of seriously. And but she came into this. She didn't really understand the power of America was a philosophy, a spirit, you know, a public opinion. She was more coming from outside is like, you know, it was more of an institution that it was in written on paper or something. You know, once she realized that that ain't the way it works, you know, I think she became way more, I don't know, freedom oriented, libertarian, whatever. But I wouldn't call her libertarian, but she's definitely.
Well, actually, she said she was a Ron Paul supporter back in 2008, 2012.
Yeah, that kind of a little bit wider, you know, swath than just libertarian. But it was. Well, she wanted my help in trying to convert the Libertarian Party into a platform for her whistleblower campaign people back in 08 or whatever. She was, I'm going, Sabelle, do not go down this road. It's a waste of freaking brain damage. I mean, you do not, whatever. And she wanted to do what she wanted to do. But I'm going, there will come a time to where everything that you have to share and say is going to be, you know, you're going to be the hero, you know, maintain your integrity of this and don't get involved, you know. Ugh. So I'm glad she went the journalist route. And I think when we come back, you can give us kind of, you know, details on how that's doing. How are you doing? How's the baby?
Keeping us awake and keeping us lively. You'll probably hear her at some point tonight. So there you go.
Well, your other child is how old?
Just turned 3.
You know, they go, yeah, a kid is so much worse. Oh, 2 kids. Oh, my God. Yeah, 2 is easier than 1. I guarantee it. Okay. The 3-year-old will start helping a little bit, and then they entertain each other, and they're in the corner of, they might be getting in trouble, but do the padded room of whatever.
I think in a year or two, it'll be great, but right now, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you know, it's a lot easier for later. That's just my opinion, you know, having gone through this. But, I got 5 grandkids spent the night last night. You know, they're over here in the morning. They'll be getting up. They'll be hearing Grandpa yelling. They'll start one at a time coming in and hugging on. But, heck, that's what it's all about. See, you get twice as many grandkids if you have 2 kids.
That's true. There you go.
You know, it's all about grandkids. All right, we'll be back in about 45 seconds.
All right.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question?
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Which now voices can be heard?
Mr. James Corbett, JamesCorbettCorbettReport.com. Okay, what we're going to go ahead and do is I want to, you know, just, you know, segue into, you know, talking about news bud and everything. We'll get the history on that. But there's a story on Freedom's Phoenix. Ocean-going cyclist envisions a world without borders, with no borders. Now, he's just, it's kind of a four-wheeled canoe or kayak of ocean-going pedal across, you know, the land, and then he gets to an ocean, and he goes across it, and then he pedals again, and kind of, you know, and this is on Gizmondo, you know, and they're talking about a world without borders. I mean, a tech thing, a going across the ocean thing, all of a sudden people are talking about it's becoming popular opinion. It's like, yeah, I'm just not for... No, America! You need America, got America and the borders and walls of America. The attitude, I don't think they mean world government. They're more like just none. You know, just got people be free to... Fine, you want to have a government, fine, but don't get in my way if I got to do something. Well, here we have Sybil Edmonds was a very... She was a very high-profile whistleblower in the 9/11 thing. She was an FBI translator that, you know, wants to go, you know, serve country America. And she came across enormous corruption inside Congress of this and who did what and everything. And you give me immunity, I'll tell you everything. They go, nope, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. Well, eventually the information got out, but it took years and years and years and years and years and years. And now she's going into journalism. And I'm going, all right, journalism... for what purpose, and how is this shaping up, and what is it that they're doing for fundraising, and how they're going to organize themselves, and someone, Mr. James Corbett, I'm not officially inside of nothing, I don't know, but he works with him, advises him, participates, and he's going to tell us every little old thing. James, go.
Well, NewsBud is an extension of BoilingFrogsPost.com, which is Sybil Edmonds' current venture and site, which is a collection of reporters and podcasters and people who've come together on that site to produce work over the years. I'm one of the people who produced a regular video series there for a few years. NewsBud is going to take that to the next level. There's going to be when it's fully funded, there's going to be over a dozen full-time staff, and it's going to be a large media outlet. That's the idea. And I think the initial idea and impetus and kick in the butt for this was last year with the Denny Hastert thing starting to come out. And the trial and all of that starting. It was a real wake-up call for Sybil, who had talked about Dennis Hastert before. She had had some of that information and had talked about it and raised awareness about this over the years. And it was, I think, exceptionally frustrating to see how the even now the fact that Hastert has been convicted, he is a child molester, the judge said so in the sentencing, it's still focused on, oh, you know, 50 years ago, whatever, when he was a high school coach or whatever. But once he got into Congress,
he
was squeaky clean. Blah, 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 you know.
Well, this is one thing. Go ahead and talk about Hastert, you know, as his career. I mean, he was like the longest serving House of Representatives, Speaker of the House, something. You know, that boy was high up in the, you know, they had something on him. Yeah. He did exactly what he was told as they supplied him with little boys. You know?
Yeah, well, he did get into the House in a very strange way. I don't remember the details at this point, but his first political election that he won was, in fact, it was some incumbent who had actually won the vote, ended up dying, so he ended up getting the spot. And I think this similar thing happened on his way to the House as well.
Yeah, wait. I think the guy died and still won the election. And then he couldn't beat a dead guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
I think you might be right about
that. Yeah, it was something like that. I'm like, wow.
But it was something like that. He certainly wasn't a winner. But he rose through the ranks to become, you know, two heartbeats away from the presidency. He was the Speaker of the House I think the longest serving Speaker of the House. I think you're right about that. So, yes, he was at the very height of political power. And it's the assertion of Sibel and other reporters who put this together, like Wayne Madsen, have reported on it over a decade ago, liked to visit, hated flying, hated taking flights anywhere, but loved to take big, long flights to Thailand and Cambodia and places like that. I wonder why. Oh, that's right, because he was caught up in all of this pedophile politics stuff that goes on in those circles. So, and now it's come out to the fact that, oh, yes, you know, when he, back before he was ever in politics, he was involved in this stuff. But the idea is that suddenly this went away when he became a politician.
Okay. You know, there's so much that rings true on a lot of this stuff and how they control the both houses of Congress, how they control the presidency, you know, the and they, you know, I go they, them, those are all the same, the ones that won't leave me alone. So it's easy for me to say they because I know in my head what I'm thinking of. I'm going, who are they? I don't know. The freaking tapestry of the cornucopia, the plethora of all the guys that won't leave me alone, and they got shiny ties, and you're going to force me, and here's your vaccination. I mean, you know, this is, but I'm looking at the people behind Hassert and company. Is it a Republican thing, a Democrat thing, a military-industrial empire world central banking thing? What is it? Is it there a single thing? No. Is it a group of thing? What?
Yeah. It's definitely not left-right. In fact, the story of how the FBI came to find out about Hassert and what was going on there is a fascinating one. Sibel did a series of podcasts last year talking about this. Basically, Clinton had enabled the Justice Department to set up a special FBI counterintelligence unit that was looking at congressmen trying to dig up dirt in order to blackmail them, because the impeachment thing was coming up in Congress at that time. So Clinton wanted the dirt on these people. And so they started this program and started scooping up all this dirt. But they weren't just getting dirt on Republicans. They were getting Democrat dirt as well. They were getting dirt on all sorts of people all across the board. And so they had to shut that down because there were all these FBI agents who were listening in on all of these activities and finding evidence, you know, of these trips, junkets to Thailand and other places where they're giving them young boys and all of this craziness that's going on. FBI agents are foaming at the mouth trying to get this prosecuted. And so they had to wrap it up and say, oh, we can't prosecute because this information wasn't collected the right way. And so they wrapped up that program and then basically shuttled it off to the NSA, which picked up around 2002, 2003, started eavesdropping on politicians, as we now know from whistleblowers like Russ Tice and others. So that was the origins of where this information was coming from. And the problem was, when you cast that net, you don't know what you're going to catch. You can't just catch Republicans or just catch Democrats. You're going to catch them all because they're all in on it.
They are in on who's they? You mean anybody that's in politics for anything?
Anyone who gets to any level of power and influence has some dirt on them somewhere. That's the reason that politicians get to where they are, because the politicians ultimately are just the representatives of the real money and the real power. And if you don't have dirt on you, they're not going to want to promote you, because obviously if they have dirt on you, they can take you down in a second's notice.
You know, I'd interviewed an Interpol guy one time, and he was saying that when they were doing surveillance or saving children or whatever the heck they were doing in Thailand, that the way it worked was you would have constant surveillance of all these places. They do photo recognition on some people that go in. There'd be politicians from around the world, and they would take the picture, publish it in Thai in some little rag of a newsletter or something there. So it was like public record. It's out there. It wasn't a secret. Oh, look at this guy. And he's behind and kind of, but nobody would ever see it. It wasn't, you know, search engineable. It didn't kind of, you know, it was off the grid or something. And then about 10 years later, it'd be in a folder along with some other goodies. And they go, gotcha. And we need you to do this. So it's like to be an American politician. It's getting to where, certainly in leadership, it's a minimum job requirement to be a pedophile scumbag piece of crap. It's a requirement. And I say that, you know, just from history. I say that from observation. I say that Hassert, okay? You think they didn't know?
Yeah, it was all such a big surprise, right? No, I mean, I think you're exactly right. And this isn't some surprising thing. This isn't some new thing that was just invented recently. I mean, intelligence agencies have been using this for a very, very long time. Dig up, put people in compromising situations, get your photographs, get your whatever, and then you can blackmail them, you know, in 7 ways from Sunday when the time comes.
four. JamesCorbett.com. We come back.
LRN.FM is proud to announce our official listening apps for Android and iOS devices. Now you can easily tune into our streams anywhere, anytime on your smartphone or tablet. Just visit apps.lrn.fm or search for LRN.FM in the Android or Apple app stores. Please download, rate us 5 stars, then share the link on your social media and let your friends and family know how you're listening to LRN.FM. Download it now, free, at apps.lrn.fm.
Okay, is there any things you want to make sure we cover in this last segment?
What would be good?
Well, we got wars and rumors of wars. We got South China Sea, blah, blah, blah. We got, NATO strangling on Russia and their response of Israel doing Syria or something. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of crap going on in the Middle East. You know,
how about U.S. government secretly destroyed evidence for the 9/11 trial that they're supposedly trying to do?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. That's why we'll do it, and we'll talk about it. Here we go.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Turn on the tube, and what do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point their crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all their time feeling sorry for themselves. Think of this, think of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat.
Get over it! Get over it! Oh, we're so over it!
Crying, pitching a fit.
Get over it! Get over it! Get over what? I don't know. Quit your whining, pitching, pitching a fit. Just dick. Do what? I don't know. Break free in your head is the first thing. You know, this is just, it's a revolution between the ears. And it's just understanding certain things. You know, one of the things that, talking off air with James, like, oh, you want to talk about, I go, ooh, the government is destroying evidence on the 9/11 thing. And doing, I said, what? Oh, yeah, that's one thing, James. I watched your, follow the money thing. You know, your 9/11, heck, what was that? An hour, 2 hours or something? I mean, that was a long damn time. How long was that thing?
It was probably over an hour, probably an hour and a quarter, something like that.
Yeah, it was a lesson, and I was going, damn. And you know, a lot of this stuff as time goes on, the deck covering kind of whatever, but James, man, he put it together, and it's like, holy crap, there is somebody's gonna have to stay after school. Okay, I'm just wondering who or what. Well, what's the government doing to hide all the stuff that you were talking about?
Well, that's a good question, because we don't really know. All we know, for sure, we know that the government did destroy some evidence that was favorable to the defense in this trial of 9/11 mastermind.
Okay, wait a minute. Defense. Favorable to defense. Who's the defense and who's prosecuting?
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the so-called 9/11 mastermind, and you might remember back in the day, New York Post and other places, oh, this is the mastermind. He planned a 9/11 A to Z, and all of that kind of stuff that was plastered all over the media at the time. Oh, they've got him. This is the guy. You know, this is the man who really put the plot together. Now, there is some evidence that we know now, because some court filings have come out, that the government had told the prosecutors, you've got to keep this evidence, while we decide what to do with it. And, oh, lo and behold, it turns out they destroyed it. We don't know what the evidence even is. They can't even say, the defense lawyers can't even say what it is. All they can say is it was favorable to the defense. So we don't even know what's happening, which is kind of a fitting way of looking at this show trial that they're trying to put on, this kangaroo court of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who, let's keep in mind, was waterboarded 183 times, I believe, in a single month, given rectal hydration, kept awake for 7.5 days, made to stand up for hours at a time. All of this torture that he was put through in order to get this confession out of him. And in the end, he not only confessed to 9/11, he ended up confessing to things like a plot to blow up an office tower that didn't even yet exist when he was apprehended by the U.S. It was built after he was actually put in
prison. I shot JFK! You know, whatever you want me to say!
Exactly. I killed the tooth bunny, a tooth fairy. Yeah. So, I mean, it's complete garbage, and that is the garbage that the 9/11 Commission report was based on. Most of the 9/11 Commission report came from torture testimony from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others that is 100% unreliable. The 9/11 Commission itself didn't even get to review the evidence directly. It was conveyed to them, and all of the records of those torture sessions, again, there was a judge saying the CIA had to keep that information, and they destroyed it. And
So all a bunch of this evidence that they had and then kind of in the CIA and then it's gone.
Yeah, they just destroyed it. A direct violation of the court order. And guess who went to jail for that?
Nobody. Yeah.
That's what the 9/11 fairy tale is based on, is that kind of nonsense. So they're going to put on some show trial at some point, and who knows if they'll even present anything of the evidence or the case. It'll all be in some locked, sealed room that no one will ever be able to report on. But trust us, we got our man. This is it. You know, done and dusted.
Damn. You know, what's the end of this? I mean, we're getting into the election cycle of, people get to bitch about something, and they hear me. Why don't you hear me? I mean, I'm wondering where the real power of public opinion is. I mean, is it as simple as where you spend your money, you buy, what you do, what, sports team you don't support? I mean, something. You know, what do you think the answer? What are you trying to, make people aware of to be a solution to something?
Yeah, I think vote with your dollars is a pretty good rule of thumb. I don't think it's the only thing, but it is an important part of us, because obviously our time is our money. We put our life force and our energy into making it, and then we direct it to things that we care about. And that's the same thing with our energy, our attention, our excitement. We direct it to things that we care about. And if people keep putting it in this four-year dog and pony circus that comes to town and put all their emotion and identity and, this will save the world into that, then that makes it into something more important than it really is. I mean, all you're doing is, choosing which management team is going to run, Slave Inc. And I'm not interested in that. Let's put our time, our effort, our energy, our money into creative solutions that help people interact with each other. Things like Open Bazaar or, things like that go around the system, outside the system. It's agoristic. They can't tax it. They can't control it. They can't contain it. They can't spy on it. That's the kind of stuff we need, and we need a lot more of that, and we need people to recognize that that's important.
My problem is so many people are going to see these young leave-me-alone-ist voluntarists of we got our own crypto, whatever the heck, and they're not going to recognize borders or boundaries. They're not going to recognize jurisdictions. They're not going to recognize the idea of I got to get a permit and no, you can. Yeah, screw you. I just did, And then the other people are going to be looking at them and going, hey, that guy, he's like freer than me. You should do something about it.
Well, yes. I think you're right about that. That's always the force. People hate seeing people be free because, we can't have that. But the other side of that is I think freedom is the genie once it's out of the bottle, it's really hard to put back. Once people taste what it is, for example, in Uber, they're never going to go back to the taxi monopoly. I mean, no one thinks that's a great idea once they've tasted the other side of that. And I think there's so many different places where we're pushing on that through these innovations that are coming along I think there's a growing, it's a growing cultural societal force. It has nothing to do with people consciously thinking this is about freedom, this is about libertarianism or anything like that, but that's what it ultimately is.
Oh, and they're going to get a dose. I remember this, Stossel did a thing, God, it must have been a decade or more ago, it could have even been in the 90s, that they were giving rides in Manhattan with private minivans just going and pulling up. Hey, who wants to ride? Okay, throw a couple of bucks and do it. Boom! You're so freaking in trouble. And I'm just going, what a butthead move by whomever. This is, people are going to just start win, freedom. There's an app for that. And that's what's happening. And I'm going, now we're looking at, there's something I just became aware of. Next week we'll be doing a lot. It's called DAO, distributed the autonomous organization or whatever, the DAO. And what they're doing is it's on Ethereum thing. They've already raised almost $200 million. I mean, and just boom, putting it up. The concept of you have a token that you vote what you want innovated. And when you get enough people to do it, okay, it'll cost this and we'll develop that and we'll build on top of Freedom. There's an app for it. Fine. We got that app. We developed and people put in the money and done. This is going to, and it's free market. It's just people doing it. And then when it's done, they get a part of the revenue for whatever gazillion dollars they make of, you know, but it's not shares because then they're SEC stuff. I mean, all this stuff, if you just got government out of the way, we'd take care of it. It's just the idea that you need a permission slip. Well, that is starting to go away internationally as they get inside their own world or outside of the control mechanism that they got with encryption. This is just the beginning, James, the beginning. And we're going to see lots of stuff. Are you optimistic about the future or are you worried?
If I didn't think there was at least a chance that we can, you know, save something from this, I mean, I wouldn't be here talking to you. I wouldn't be having children. I would be curled up in a corner, you know, crying myself to sleep. So, no, I mean, as long as there's humanity, there is hope. And that's what we have to ultimately live for. And I always try to remember what it is I'm fighting for. I'm not fighting against all of these people. I'm fighting for my family and, the people around me and my friends and the beautiful world we live in. So,
absolutely.
That's the side of it we have to keep in mind.
Thank you. You know, one thing they say, how can you bring children into this world? It's so bad. I go, hell, that's why you bring them in. You know, go fix it. We're going to get some.
We're going to get some good guys.
We're going to outbreed them. Breeding them out. James Corbett is doing his job. Breeding out, you know, the good guys, you know, versus the bad guys. And I'm just really looking forward to, you know, think about this. You know, all of a sudden, James is going to have kids that are teenagers and adults and stuff. Then what? It's not me. I always told him, I go, it's not me you have to worry about. It's my children and grandchildren, and they be a coming. James Corbett. Yeah, CorbettReport.com. All right, cool. You know, that was, it'd be great to talk to you after the LP convention experience. I'm just kind of open my mind, see what's up.
Let me know how it goes.
You know, that'll be of interest. Hey, thanks for doing this and being up late for us, man.
No problem. Peace, now I'm going to crawl into bed and go to sleep.
I know. I'll let you go, buddy. Bye.
All right. Take care.
This is your Roberts & Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Wednesday, gold is down $5 at $1,222 per ounce. Silver is 11 cents higher at $16.38 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $448. Yesterday's big drop in metals, prompted by dollar strength against other currencies, has created a great buying opportunity. To find out more, give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. Silver is trading at $16.29 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,228 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $451. Antiwar.com reports the Minsk peace accords, which were supposed to lead to a resolution of the East Ukraine civil war, have not made much progress in recent months, but Russian and Ukrainian officials on Tuesday pledged to intensify cooperation in talks brokered by Germany and France. The deal was to grant increased autonomy to the eastern oblast of Donetsk and Luhansk, and those oblasts would end their rebellion. Little progress has been made to that end, with intermittent fighting on the frontier. Ukrainian officials have complained the Russian-backed rebels have not followed through on ending their rebellion, while the rebels know that the Ukrainian central government did not deliver the autonomy and blocked them from holding elections. German officials say that Tuesday's talk centered on the possibility of holding those elections, though beyond the general pledge to increase cooperation, it is not clear what, if anything, this means for the possibility of having those elections anytime soon. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. UPI reports the man who authorities say launched a racially motivated attack on a historically black South Carolina church a year ago, killing 9, faces 2 upcoming criminal trials, both of which are now seeking to put suspect Dylan S. Roof to death. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch said Tuesday that after great consideration, her Justice Department will seek the death penalty during its federal prosecution of Roof. A federal grand jury returned a 33-count indictment against Roof last year, with authorities accusing him of committing hate crimes, weapons charges, and obstructing religion. Lynch said in a statement on Tuesday, following the department's rigorous review process to thoroughly consider all relevant factual and legal issues, I have determined that the Justice Department will seek the death penalty. The nature of the alleged crime and the resulting harm compelled this decision. Prosecutors outlined their reasons for seeking capital punishment in a 7-page court filing on Tuesday, claiming that Roof, an accused white supremacist, demonstrated a lack of remorse for.
Hello.
Good morning, James. It's Donna. How are you?
Good, Donna. How are you?
Doing good. And there we go. You've been on the show before many times, so you know the format. But just remember about the audio and video recording. Video is not editable. So if you're in your talking, it'll be on the video.
Got it.
Okay. I guess there's a lot of different things. Are you going to the Libertarian National Convention?
Hell no.
Hell no. I know that's what Ernie said, too. But now he's going, so you guys can talk about that. He can tell you all about the John McAfee thing. All right, so we got about 2.5 minutes. I'm going to put you on hold.
Okay, let me tell you the McAfee story.
Okay.
Did you hear the show Friday?
I did not get a chance to yet.
Okay, this is what the deal was. McAfee is like, if you don't go, you're going to kick yourself in the ass, and you should go, and you better go. If you don't go, you'll be like missing the party of the go. And I go, well, convince me that I need to go. Why would I go get that brain damage, okay? Uh-huh. And waste the money if I could go take a trip and go scuba or something. He goes, if you are not impressed and fulfilled by your trip, I will pay for your ticket. And I go, yeah, well, there's not going to be any place to stay. It's all filled up and kind of, you know, and he goes, you can stay at my condo.
Hard to refuse an offer like that.
I go, okay.
Hard to say no to that, isn't it?
Well, I talked to Daryl Perry, and I said, hey, man, you know, this is the deal. I just want you to know. I want to make sure you get in, you know, your tokens for the debate and all that kind of stuff. And he goes, yep. And I go, but, you know, if it starts to drop by, I'm much more McAfee than these other guys gag me, you know, and we'll have a party. And he goes, yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. You know, we'll probably do the same thing. So I'm going, all right, cool. So he's, you know, I think Daryl is kind of, you know, looking forward to McAfee party too. So then yesterday we had the Libertarian Party was in U.S. District Court on some ballot access stuff that we're doing, working on. And the national chair was there. And I didn't know he was from here. You know, this kid, I remember when he's like 12 years old, his dad was bringing him to Libertarian meetings. I met him back then. And now he's chair, but I know nothing. We'll find out more. Here we go.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Straight from James Corbett to James Babb. James Babb, he's been involved in a whole bunch of stuff. Just name off some. WeWon'tFly.com, big TSA protest that was like freaking internationally covered everywhere, and we had a lot of fun here in Phoenix. QuitForPeace.com, anti-war activist stuff. Fija.com, fully informed jury. JuryRightsProject.com. You know, he'd put up a bunch of, you know, stop wars, home educate banners, co-host of East Coast Bitcoin Summit with Mike Salvi. You know, this is, you know, James is, got the bio of an activist, and he's about ready to take his summer off starting at Pork Fest with his family. Now, I've seen his girls grow up. He and Christina just, you know, having fun going for the summer of doing, and we are inspired by his activities. And James, welcome back on the show.
So great to be with you, Ernie.
Okay. Yes, you're always at, you know, like Libertarian Party stuff. What up with that?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm always at Libertarian Party stuff. In fact, you know, I've done my best to avoid it. I just somehow, you know, I have so many friends that are involved. I always get like roped in because there's some like horrible thing happening and they need help.
Well, there's a lot of horrible things happening because you're always at some libertarian something. Are you going to the national convention? Yeah.
I have no intention of doing that. So,
is that are you going to the national convention?
No.
You know, damn it! I thought you would definitely. You're always winding up going somewhere, man. One of these things.
I love to travel, and I would love to hang out with all of those libertarians. I mean, I sometimes I make jokes about the Libertarian Party, but I have met some of the most incredible libertarians through the Libertarian
Party. It is going to be.
I'm not
going to
criticize the people because so many of them are some of the most incredible, upstanding, principled human beings that have taught me so much that I'm not criticizing them.
Yeah, I got a lot of critique for the party and its structure and their kind of, you know, hiding their light under a wet wool blanket kind of crap. And I'm just I'm glad to see that this year, you know, the McAfee thing. The only thing that I can think of is I big Daryl Perry support. I'm like, you know, I'm 98% on the I side with kind of thing. I mean, yeah, Daryl, man, Pace. I want to make sure that he gets in the C-SPAN debates. You know, we have tokens that you got to get 10% of the people to be able to go in, and so that limits it to probably a maximum, maybe 5-8, something like that. I want to make sure Daryl's in there. Then there's going to be, you know, some fun, but it's Trump tweeting election year. It's like Trump, this is our bet. I mean, to think you look at Trump, well, at least, oh, well, there's Trump causing a ruckus and might expose some of their Trump. Then he starts appointing all his cabinet of scumbags, and I'm going, wow. Then here comes McAfee. You know, it's going to be, he's going to out-tweet Trump. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, I think, I'm hoping he could be everybody's second choice. And sort of like, if there's enough animosity between Gary Johnson supporters and Austin Peterson supporters that they'd never support the other guy, well, McAfee's right there. It could be everybody.
Well, what do you, you know, I haven't even paid.
Everybody could agree to that. You know,
I haven't even been paying attention.
That'd be fun, at least.
James, I haven't been paying attention. What is the animosity between Peterson and John? What are the camps? How are they broken up? Who's going to have the most buses? I mean, it's kind of like a Mitt Romney versus McCain thing or
something. You know, it just seems like each camp has their, like, really just loyal Facebook trollers that I can't seem to get out of my news feed. That's all I know, really. I don't pretend to have any, like, specialized knowledge on that.
You're still on Facebook?
How else am I going to know what's going on?
Oh,
Twitter?
Crap. No. Now, what was that Twain thing? If you don't read the paper, you're uninformed. If you read it, you're misinformed. I mean, Facebook is like, you know, neon flash an example of that or what?
Well, I think it's a little more interesting than that, but
much.
You know, buyer beware, right? I'm down with that.
Yeah. Well, what was it? What do you think about this Glenn Beck thing and Facebook deal and conservative, whatever the heck? You paid attention to that?
No, last I remember, he was accusing Ron Paul's supporters of being terrorists for having a money bomb. What's he doing now?
You know, one thing was last Monday, you know, McAfee was encouraged by his performance at the Las Vegas presidential debate that Penn Jillette did. And Penn Jillette has, you know, a lot of friends and entertainers and celebrities and so on asking some questions and participating in the audience and all that. It was a shindig. And I'm going, okay, so Penn Jillette is working at the Blaze with Glenn Beck. And I'm going, All right. To what end is this kind of, you know, he goes, yeah, in a freedom-oriented world of a lot of very, you know, he and I can be friends. I'm like, okay, you know, tell me how that works out. But
well, they're both trained performers. Why? There's a basis for friendship there.
There you go.
They both know how to put on a show and entertain an audience. So it makes sense to me.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Wow.
Well, like, couldn't you have a friendship based on with a fellow radio host, maybe just based on audio equipment and, you know, and professionalism of doing radio? It doesn't mean you're going to have to agree on philosophy. You could still be friends, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been at radio stations where they covered it. I mean, from lefty liberal to super conservative, kind of whatever. And I'm just nice to everybody. I don't care, you know.
Of course. So why wouldn't Penn Jillette be that way? I mean, here's I guess Glenn Beck, you know. He's a trained script reader. He really knows how. he brings a lot of professionalism to his acting. So why not, you know, have a friendship on illusion, right?
Yep.
Penn's into illusion. He's really big into that.
So. You know what Glenn Beck reminds me of? You got to see. Did we ever tell you about it? The last scene in Network, you know, where Ned Beatty, the character, is explaining it to him. You have mastered the forces of the universe, you know, and mad as hell, not going to take it anymore. What a lot of people don't know is the end of that movie is the real movie. At the end, it's the Glenn Beck character sells his soul to the man.
Mm.
I mean, you go watch Network, and he'll just, you know, pull it up on it. Donna, put the Network clip that I'm talking about in the third hour of James Babb so people can see, oh, my God, you know? So a lot of people miss it. You know, this stuff has been covered in media a lot, and they see it. What do you think the prevailing public opinion is on this election now? How's it going to, you know, turn out in the end, you think?
I think everybody's just like braced for impact from whatever camp they're in. They're like, they're just, well, first of all, you know, most people are under the impression that it matters. So it's a little bit of a relief to those that figure out it doesn't matter.
Just doesn't matter.
For those that think it matters, they seem to be deeply concerned at their selection of just, you know, it seems like every round they get like, wow, they just dig deeper into the ditch to find the worst possible candidates. And I don't know how awful can these candidates get before people are, you know, make some kind of a just, you know, and I'm just going to forget about the whole thing. Even my mom is like, you know, career, lifelong, like just Republican loyalist, never really thought about politics, just does Republican because that's what her and her friends have always done. You know, she's just like, I can't vote for Trump. Who is this libertarian candidate? I'm finally going to start looking. You know, I'm like, really? I'm like, I said, I guess that's progress.
Well, you know, I like Gary Johnson personally. I mean, you know, he and I get along fine. We've done, you know, things to support his effort of getting out and doing whatever. But is he going to wow anybody? Is he going to get a lot of the attention? Is he going to be the get in the presidential debate? And I'm going to be able to out Trump Trump. I just don't
people could fall for that.
You're still voting?
Yeah.
More James Babb when we come back in just a little bit.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay. I got this queued up, but it's like 2 minutes. I'm not sure I want to do that long, but it is kind of... funny. You know, that Bill Murray and Meatballs, it just doesn't matter. Just doesn't matter. You know, I want to do that. And then I really want you to see that network. Are you at your computer, me asking knowingly?
Yeah.
Go network, Ned Beatty speech. Just do that.
I'm sure I've seen it.
Man, if you've seen it, you'd remember it. Hopefully. Did it come up?
Yeah, the world is a business.
Yeah. You know, and what time is it now? You watch it in the next break. How long is it?
It's almost 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know, you need to see it. Because a lot of people, all they remember that movie is, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. What they don't realize, the entire buildup, this was like a script for Glenn Beck. This whole thing is it might as well be Glenn Beck. You know, and I'm just going, man, this is so predictable what's going to happen. And, you know, Hollywood,
I mean,
you know.
Does anybody care about Glenn Beck anymore? Does he even have a show? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. The Blaze he has, you know, but it doesn't matter because this clip tells you what is really going on. He's funded. He's made there's people to make sure that he's there doing what? Whatever the hell they tell him. You know, it's an opinion thing. And what they don't realize is this. Did you see the revolution? Exit Politics video of McAfee?
His new promo video.
Yeah, the Let Life Live, party. Yeah. And, you know, you know, that's the attitude that they're afraid of. The future, be libertarian, making it cool kind of thing. I don't always run for president, but when I do, I make it cool. I mean, you know, that kind of thing.
I think, you know what, it's as close as we're going to get to cool for the Libertarian Party, so it would be well suited to go that way.
I'm going to play this clip. It's a couple minutes, but it makes the point. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Come on, look, just because we're losing doesn't mean it's all over.
Cut the crap, Morty. I mean, the Mohawks have beaten us the last 12 years. They're going to beat us again.
That's just the attitude we don't need, Phil.
Sure, Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure, they're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Hell, every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse. Not masseur, masseuse. But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine tests every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I tell you, it just doesn't matter. 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 Even if we win, if we win, even if we win, even if we play so far over our heads that our noses bleed for a week to 10 days, even if God
doesn't matter
if we win or we lose. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, you see, this is, you know, this is my point. You know,
could Bill Murray be the candidate? Now, tell me, Bill.
It just doesn't matter. And when we do the Trump report, I always bring this up or play it or something, because Dr. Frank just, it does not. I go, no, Even if they did come on our side, it doesn't matter because they got all the money. So quit playing their game. And I'm just like, it just doesn't matter. So your advocacy for, like, you're still voting or none of the above or voting for nobody and so on. How does that, play with your friends and family and fellow activists?
Well, they've either, I guess, disassociated with me or have fully accepted it themselves. So...
No, I don't
get any arguments.
I've had James Corbett on. He was talking about NewsBud, the new media thing for Sybelle Edmonds. And Sybelle, I remember, we've been acquaintances, friends. I've been interviewing her for, a decade or so. And she has evolved. It has got to where, we just got to get the whistleblowers running for Congress and go in and tell the American people that the U.S. government is bad. And I'm like, I think they know, okay? I'm not really sure. You're just kind of supporting this out. I can't help you. I mean, I understand and peace, but you're going to come to the conclusion that you get it, and I think she's starting to get it. There's a lot of people that we spent a lot of time. We didn't even have to convince them. We just had to explain to them why we were so convinced, and time would just bring them over to our side. And I use your... you participated in a forum, a debate, a presentation with a bunch of third parties at a thing in Philadelphia in the last presidential election cycle, I think it was. And I used that as an example. I thought your arguments were awesome, and
I probably got them from you, Ernie. There's nothing new under the sun that
I know.
I'm
I ripped
say.
It off of you and you forgot. So this is, that mindset and the activists that are doing a lot of these things with you, are they generally not voters or you don't care, or has it come up?
Well, sometimes it comes up, and I got the question from you, still voting. Two words really is kind of the way I just handle the, situations. If somebody's like, thinks something's important about voting and stuff, or just how's that working out? Okay, let me know how it goes. I personally want to just withhold my consent, so if people choose that, I think people realize that is an option. And if you look at the numbers of people that aren't participating, the statistics, that camp gets bigger every time. So, we actually win the majority in these presidential
exactly.
elections.
Exactly. This is the point that I was making. They're going, well, you can't win. I go, are you kidding me? The vast majority of Americans that can even vote don't vote. I win. Okay. I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about.
So anyway, but the fact that that percentage seems to get larger and larger, and the quality of the quality of the illusion for the regime gets worse and worse. So I don't know, follow those trajectories and where do we end up?
I don't know. Where do we end up?
Well, I think it could be just a lot of people ignoring them away.
I like that. I like that. That's what it's going to take. And I tell you what, I spoke at March Against Monsanto Saturday. And the first one they did a few years ago, I spoke at that. And just kind of, it was popular and they wanted me to come back this year because it kind of set the right tone last time. I'm going, look, what are you marching for? Is it really against it? It's for the freedom of choice and the freedom of you get to know your children and the freedom and the awareness of freedom. And if you think voting is going to, make a difference, you haven't been paying attention, blah, blah, blah. So we do that again this year, and I can see that all of a sudden many more people came up, and they were like, it's hundreds of people there, and they come up, and they're like, thank you. Yeah, I just want to be clear that's why I'm here. I don't know what the hell all these people are going on about, especially it's not even going to be Monsanto anymore. It's going to be Bayer spending $42 billion to buy up Monsanto. And now you have I'm explaining that. I'm giving some knowledge. I'm going, I don't think you guys get it. You're going to have the largest pharmaceutical company that's doing vaccinations, that has GMO food, the largest pesticides. And oh, by the way, when we screwed up your body and you're 60 and all your money now goes to us and pharmaceutical prescriptions. Thanks for playing. And I'm going, you guys getting it? Are you going to vote your way out of this? Quit eating their crap. I mean, quit, use your money. It's wallet voting, blah, blah, blah. I'm telling you, This is starting to permeate this concept, but it doesn't serve the special interest and the progressive whatever collective of we want you to vote Democrat kind of thing. And I think that they're starting to see that just their own vote with their money is having a big difference. And I'm just wondering, in your life, as you're living your life, what kind of financial decisions are you making that's having this impact?
Yeah, well, I guess first thing is, you know, education services, right? Like spending a lot of money on private schools, right? Is my vote that to say I don't condone these government indoctrination camps. Like I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to, you know, not going to be, you know, even if you steal my money for it. You know, not going to participate. So, you know, that's probably my biggest economic decision, you know, in that department.
Yeah, well, that's a big decision. I mean, it's Generation Next. It's where we spent most of our time and money. We lived very poorly. All four of our kids went 6 years private school, and we were poor. So I'm telling you, man, it was living in the Roach Motel for 9.5 years to be able to do that.
But it's an investment, you know.
It's a lot better life now. So the girls looking forward to their summer, or are they still going to be getting edumacated?
I don't know. I guess, you know, we'll see. You know, we're going to torment them with like 2 months of road trip. So it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. They always enjoy it, don't they?
You know, it's a lot of time together, though. So it's going to have ups and downs. I'm excited because we have a new school for Dorothy starting next year, which is just amazing. At least it's my impression. So that's kind of a transition, which she's not exactly happy about. But this place, dude, they have a drone program. Not just, you know, they have different drone programs. They've got a racing drone. Here's the racing drone section. Here's the heavy lifting drones. Here's the 3D modeling suite. Here's the, you know, like industrial fabrication, business partnerships, entrepreneur tracks, like economic training that includes stuff like specialization and comparative advantage. Like, wow.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm hoping it lives up to my expectations, but it's pretty sweet. And they offer Dorothy a very nice.
Okay, wait. Can we talk about this, you know, on the live show?
Sure. Yeah, if you want. I don't know if we have time, but I've been doing some pamphleting over in Trenton, which is like the new, like, I don't know, it's like kind of like my new adopted city over there. So if you have any interest in talking about Trenton.
What, I'm feed you stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We had NJ on.
I heard that. Yeah.
And then we had Heikland on too. He's like got restless and want to get some. So we'll definitely get into that. When we come back, let's do the education thing real quick on what you got planned for and how, and just opportunity to inspire people of whatever. You know, I just want to do that because I want to hear about it. And then we'll do the pamphleting thing. Cool?
Sure.
All right. We'll be back in just a little bit.
Listen to LRN.FM on any phone, anytime. 641-552-5046. That's 641-552-5046.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back with James Babb. I was sitting here texting, you know, going, yeah, I'm trying to see all the guys that I know would be partay fun for the big Friday night rave. What going to whip butt? You know, there is, if you go to We Are Change, James, you go to We Are Change, the latest video with Weiss. Judd Weiss is a VP candidate along with John McAfee. They're putting on a big party, and during the Saturday, during the event, a lot of their festival 9-foot still walking around guys are going to be in the hall during the convention, and it's just going to be a freaking party. I remember all nice. The times that we went, and Star Child, you know, wearing his platform's leopard skin with a tutu kind of deal, you know, I'm going, all right, Star Child, what up? And he goes, man, they just got to lighten up. Well, I want to see if I bet he's going to be wearing a tux or something this time. And we'll see. Okay, one thing off air, we were talking about an education opportunity for your daughters, and it sounded really cool. I wanted you to share it with us on air. Go.
Well, you know, when you shop for schools, it's difficult. So Dorothy is in eighth grade this year, and the school she's in is pretty good, but they really started having like this like identity politics and social justice themes just kept coming up. You know, like as much as I like the school, I'm like, that's just annoying. You know, I'm like. But, you know, now if this was a government school, people would be going to their school board meetings and banging on desks and trying to get people to change that. But instead, I just said, well, you know, let's look at some other choices. So found this other school and, you know, they've got these incredible entrepreneur tracks, connections with industry for doing stuff like industrial fabrication in their workshop, 3D modeling, drones. Like real robots. And then I looked at the economics curriculum and it's mentioning stuff like comparative advantage, specialization. And I'm like, okay, it sounds like they're actually can teach like business principles, which I really didn't think like a social justice warrior would be really qualified to do. So, so luckily, they offered us a nice sort of scholarship financial aid package. So we're going to make a switch. So anyway, I would go to this school if Dorothy didn't want to go.
Well, so is she willing to do it? Does she feel good about it? Is she doing it?
Well, she's doing it, and it was, but it was not an easy decision. So, yeah. You know, it's a transition for, you know, 14-year-old change in schools.
Oh, yeah, that's a biggie. Yeah. Well, you know, we're going through the same thing with our first grade granddaughter and her brother a year behind going in. He's a year They're on the born on the same day. They're 1 year apart, but he skipped 1 year, you know, because it was kind of this August birthday thing. So for boys, we kind of, yeah, they wanted to keep him back so he's not the smallest guy all the time. But so when they go into the next school, they're looking at, yeah, kindergarten is just babysitting. They're not really doing it. Well, this other school that we can do, and then but she got into the advanced part here. We go to this one. She would be making, my daughter-in-law would be making four trips a day, just take two kids to two different schools all the time. And yeah. I'm going, it's a full-time job. I go, yep. Well, it's homeschooling. I mean, everything they know, you taught them anyway. I go, all this, you're like fighting, you're swimming upstream against this, you know, mandatory youth indoctrination crap. Why are you doing that? You know, how can we help you get into, so we're making these decisions. It wasn't, they weren't as supportive of our position, you know, before, but I think after a couple of years of dealing with this and seeing what's going on and what the focus is, they're going, yeah, this is jacked up. So that's what this whole defending Archimedes thing was about. But I couldn't find any resources that didn't require that you be signed up and get in your head. And I'm going, holy crap. You know, there's a bunch. It's all about education, which gets us into the other things that you're doing is the pamphleting in Trenton, New Jersey. We got NJ Weedman we had on. He's got them, you know, giving him a hassle. He has a restaurant and a church of, you know, Rastafarian. We smoke weed across the street from City Hall next to the U.S. Federal Court building. And I'm going, okay, so it's not a secret. They're going after him. You have Julian Heichland come back from Israel because, damn it, he's just, no, I got to go find James Bagg and go kick some ass again, you know? So tell me about Julian's efforts and what you're doing with NJ.
Well, yeah, Julian, you know, he couldn't remain to sit on the sidelines, you know, bless his heart. And, you know, he's been a big inspiration to so many, including me. And, it's so, you know, I'm happy to, you know, do anything with him at any time. But so, you know, right around this time, we've got this, you know, there's Trenton has really become a local like hotspot of status gang activity. And, you know, as you know, since you covered Ed Fortune, the NJ Weedman, he's been under siege over there. So I started to, I said, you know what, we need to do some regular pamphleting. It's only about an hour from my house. I'm like, okay, I can get to this one. So anyway, finally got our first, time out there yesterday and it was wonderful. This place is crawling with jurors and victims. Okay. So within like 2 hours, we passed out hundreds and hundreds of pamphlets. There's just like everywhere we went, there's like this groups of jurors hanging out everywhere. They must be doing an enormous volume over there. So anyway, so it's pretty productive for pamphleting, right? So you know, one guy came out, you know, like Sergeant, what's his name? He's like, you got to go across the street. you know? And we're kind of like, why? He's like, because I said so. So we just ignored him pretty much, and he left. But then the funny thing is, like, later we're leaving, we're going, and we end up heading, we're heading back to the car. We go across the street to where he wanted us to go, and it's like a park area full of jurors smoking cigarettes. We're like, okay, here's, like, wow, actually, thank you, Sergeant Wirtz. You know, here's, you know, so anyway, this is going to be a pretty easy spot to, I think, to be, to do a lot of damage. Scoped out some great advertising spots. So anyway.
Well, this is, you know, you're doing this outreach, and, you know, before they're throwing people in jail. I mean, it's you know, Julian, you guys, I mean, but they're all hell no. And now I guess they had case law to where they're required to leave. They may say something, but they're not arresting you anymore or doing the beatdown.
Well, you know, let's, you know, there's always a risk when these armed gang members are on site. But, you know, one nice thing I have, because we have gotten some fairly aggressive opposition in different places. And the nice thing is I met a new lawyer that Ed had referred me to. Ed's lawyer. I talked to him. He's Trenton based. And I said, I just want to know, you know, I said, you know, this is my situation. They occasionally, you don't know the law and they want to come out and they threaten to arrest. What should we do about it? He goes, oh, don't worry about that. He's like, I'll just send them all a letter, letting them know that, you know, that, you know, we're in compliance with all the laws, and if they want to violate, you know, civil rights, there will be a lawsuit, and they all know me, and they know when I say there's a lawsuit, there is a lawsuit, so...
Okay, like, now, who said okay. This? Was this NJ?
No, this is his lawyer.
A
New Jersey lawyer, and anyway, so... you know, I'm like, okay, and he says, and then if we do have to sue them, he can work for damages. So I'm like, okay, this is the kind of guy. It's like, it doesn't hurt, you know, if you're going to work in Jersey, you better have some kind of a lawyer on like speed dial.
Yeah, and video.
Or maybe even written on the inside of your arm as phone number. So,
you know, that was one thing Mark Victor did. He had these little adhesive strips, you know, that had, you know, I do not consent or whatever. It's on the back of his business card. And he had these little stickers that I put in our delivery vehicles at our pizza restaurant. I put it right above the door and just stuck it there on the headliner area, you know. And I just go, boom, there it is. And they just start reading it because they read you the Miranda, right? How do you know you did it right? Because I read it. Okay, well, we've got a car.
It's
we
a
read
great
it.
Idea.
I do not consent to, you know, blah, blah, blah. What? I do not consent. You want me to start reading it over again? I mean, you know, so this is, I'm really glad that you guys are, you know, taking this on straight on. But it's taken years to get to this point to where you're not threatened with felony freaking jury tampering going to kick your ass, you know. But it took this effort that you and Julian and the guys did to make sure you even got to this point. But you're at a point now with case law and ruling that from your efforts that you can do FIJA pamphleting outreach now and not have, you know, immediate threat of death, right?
Oh, well, you know, at least the risk is less, significantly, I think.
Significantly less, but when they do something, there's always go to the video. And now you got a Trenton attorney that's wanting to get some. Well, that's good. Well, when we come back, James Babb's always getting some on something. We're going to find out his other projects and what's going on when we come back.
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I specialize in helping you find the real estate that fits your needs. Whether you are looking to purchase a home or a piece of land, whether it's in town or a rural setting, I can help you find exactly what you are looking for. Most of us are aware of the turbulent times ahead and will need to settle in a place that will suit our particular desires, not only to protect our families, but to thrive in the coming downturn of the economy. Unfortunately, that time is not in the future, but it is upon us, and if you are going to get ahead of the game, now is the time to prepare. Qualifying options for new loans are narrowing, the dollar is being devalued every day, and living expenses are on the rise. So I have created a useful tool on my webpage at DonnaHancock.com that will allow you to search for properties at your leisure that are of interest to you. Simply click on the Search MLS tab at the top of my webpage to begin your search today. Start preparing for your future, and when you are ready to move forward with your home or land buying purchase, we can work together to get you and your family ready to flourish. Feel free to call or text me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, and let's get started today.
Leading up to Pork Fest and everything, are there other events or anything you're doing, or are they out of school yet?
Well, they'll be done with school, I guess, you know, maybe the week before Pork Fest, and then, you know, then it's all fun from there.
well, I don't know, they you know, getting to be eighth grade teenager, are they looking forward to it, or I want to stay here with my friends and play video games and go to the mall, or what?
Well, Dorothy barely talks to me, you know, so I don't know.
Really?
Jeez.
Gosh.
You know, I don't know. I guess if I could send her a text or something and find out what she's thinking, but
that is the only responses I get from you know, my sons, really, as if it's, you know, and it's one of those hey, what is it? Yeah, you know, that's the most I get. All right, fine. But if I do texting, you know, yeah, all of a sudden I get, you know, like more information, and they go on about, you know, I'm going, God, man, I can do it from the next room and get more from them, you know?
Well, I guess we have to learn to communicate on the frequencies that the other person receives on, you know?
And, you know, they're not going to give you a choice either, you know? They go, no, no, don't ask Dad a question, you know? Oh, my God.
You know, it's funny, though. Yeah, because I'm used to, like, one-word answers and then just, like, And then lately I get, like, just a bare twitch of the face muscles as a response. Like,
okay. You know, it's a puberty thing. It's, you know, the grandkids. You know, I can tell you when they start going to school as young, you know, they start to. I remember the first time Kaylee, my oldest little one, she was five, going to kindergarten. And something happened. There was something going on, and I was talking about something. She goes, well, my teacher says blah, 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 so you're just wrong. And I'm like,
what?
I go, wow. I go, okay. So I let that one slide. I just kind of, well, not every day. I said something. I didn't want to, you know, bust her bubble, get into a discussion with a five-year-old. But I'm just like going, wow. If that, wow. There's a good reason not to, right there, you know. Oh, my God. All right. Oh, did you get to finish watching that network thing?
No.
Yeah, you need to.
I forgot.
Yeah, you need to. You need to. Okay, let's see. We'll do a little piece. Here we go.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country. Come take me home again. God.
Yeah, we've been smiling lately. You know, the one thing that is of interest that James may be interested in is today, later this afternoon, Drew Phillips from Bitcoin Not Bombs, and he's working with Anti-War on some stuff, they are getting me some kind of a flyer thing. They want me to take a bunch of pictures at the LP convention in Orlando to where it's kind of like it says, I'm already against the next war. You know, it said, Dear President-elect, I'm already against the next war. Because Armistice Day is like a few days after the election. So their whole focus is like, look, whoever the hell is going to be, we're already against the next war. And nice. I think that's an awesome idea. And we're going to be getting a lot of pictures because they're taking the pictures that kind of, you know, the software that morphs it into another picture or something with the coloring of whatever the hell. So they're doing that. And then they have some big event in February with Students for Liberty of the Youth for whatever, marching on Washington, doing something. And this kind of culminates in that. So I'm going, yeah, by inauguration, there's already going to be the next war. You know what I mean? So yeah, I'm glad they're doing something like this.
Yeah, why not? You know, I think the libertarians really need to you know, can never emphasize that enough, that, you know, the focus of libertarian philosophy is going to, you know, be opposed to these wars. You know, if that's a if you need a better reason to be libertarian than war, I don't know what you need.
Well, you know, I remember in 2004 when we went to Atlanta, Charles Goyette and I went, and you know, I ran for chair then. It was the first time, you know, because I go, look, they're advocating war. Neil Bortz was up there. We got to go kick ass in Afghanistan, and we need a little bit of war, some war. And I'm going,
yeah, no.
Who the hell does this? No. Well, Charles, you know, did the anti-war presentation at the same time they're doing the breakfast with Neil Bortz. And, of course, you know, I have my anti-war message. So I'm just going, why isn't the Libertarian Party embracing this? And it's because somebody waved a little bit of cash in front of them, or an opportunity of something. They got so small a self-esteem in their chest or something. Yeah. There's something else going on. So I'm just going, look, you can buy, I told McAfee, I said, you can buy the Libertarian Party for $10,000 in the right place at the right time. I mean, these guys are susceptible to anything. And he goes, okay, I'll just do a party.
Well, the party is the way to do it. And, you know, I mean, I would not want to go to, I don't know, what's Gary Johnson's party might have like space cakes, but, you know, he doesn't even drink beer. So what kind of party is that going to be? I think Daryl Perry's having a craft beer event. That's good. So, you know, like his party would be good. So,
yeah, he told me, he says, yeah, all you got to do is bring beer, you know, and make it a something, you know. So, yeah, we'll do that. I said, yep, you can count on me. I'll make sure I bring some beer. Make sure you get my token so that you could. The way it works is whoever's registered, so say it's like it's getting up to 1,000, you know, they have probably over 1,200 people on the floor. This would be the biggest one yet. So there's going to be, and it's the bust in Peterson and Johnson competing on the whatever the heck, and, you know, we'll just have a party and I don't care. I was encouraging John McAfee. I'm going, look, man, just stick around. This doesn't mean, it ain't nothing. I mean, the Libertarian, the big kind of, this is nothing. This is, we got a lot more coming, you know, just stick around. It'll be fun and get outside the political crap and you just brain damage anyway. So there is a lot of people there, and it's 10% of the registered credentialed delegates, I think, that you need their token of 10% of them in order to be able to be on the debate with on C-SPAN, the presidential libertarian debate. So, okay, so I want to make sure Daryl's up there. That's just, you know, McAfee will get his, whatever, I don't care, Daryl. Then Daryl gets the first round vote. And then, you know, I'm like, all right, then it's up. And, you know,
right, no matter who you support, you should throw your thing in for Daryl. Right. Because, right. Like, even if you really think like, oh, you know, Gary Johnson is going to be the candidate, throw it in for Daryl anyway.
Yeah.
You know,
fair.
So
he needs to
make sure he's in there. So at least somebody's going to deliver a principled libertarian message on TV, because really, what else is the point?
You know, that was one thing that they're very critical of him saying. When he says, because I said this, you know, we were saying this purist back in 2000, or we're the libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party. And I'm sure that's where he got it from. And when he goes up, he goes, I represent the libertarians and the Libertarian Party. Well, what are you kidding? I'm going, oh, sounds like you're feeling a little guilty there. What's up, man? You know? So,
right. Why does that create a defensive reaction?
Yeah, I am. You know, I don't want to say anything bad about any. Okay, I will. The Gary Johnson, he got his chance last time. I've had him on. We even helped him with fundraisers and stuff. And we kind of, you know, I like him personally, but just I kind of, you know, it is to tax. Okay. Then you have Peterson. He just, how does he strike you? You paid attention to Austin Peterson at all?
He just seems to be like an internet troll to me. I don't really know that much more about him, but I don't know. Is there
just too?
Seems like Judge Napolitano didn't really rub off on him enough. Like when they were working together, like he was his producer, right? I'm like,
yeah,
you know what?
That
guy should really. He's got some skills, and I think he's. I'd like to see him making more shows like Freedom Watch. You know, I think that's a better use than internet trolling. You know?
Yeah, I've been. But he definitely is doing the social networking of whatever, and I'm just wondering how that would compete with McAfee's understanding way that he did, because McAfee's more Trump-esque. He goes, yeah, Trump puts on a show. It's just day-to-day life for me.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair to call that, you know, like Trump-esque. I think that that's just, here's a guy who's willing to own himself, you know, warts and all. You know, it seems like he's a little bit of a BSer, but he's at least, I think, interesting, and, you know, I don't care, but I'd like to see somebody that gets out there and can really explain libertarianism to the masses, like, or, you know, to the statist masses. I mean, Gary Johnson, all he's done is explain his statism to libertarians.
I know, God.
You know, I don't want to hear 4 more years of him explaining why he's has such an awful statist position on something. Like, that's totally boring.
You know, and Peterson is kind of the same way, but with the justification of the Constitution. Well, we have, you know, it's kind of an article, whatever, I don't care. And McAfee is, when I say Trump, up ask, I'm talking about the lightning rod of attention with Twitter. Who, and imagine a national debate. Now, this one, it's going to be interesting for them, if McAfee is the nominee, for them to have a debate between Hillary and Trump, and you know McAfee is going to be getting a having fun with this. And
what,
if they,
yeah, what McAfee should do is do like a simulcast where we like sort of like splice him over top where he can like mute them and like make jokes about them.
Yeah.
Like while they're like
just like Trump did, just like Trump did when they didn't have him in the Fox debate of kind of him doing the scene. You know, McAfee, that's what I mean. He's going to out Trump Trump. It's going to get more attention and deservedly so. It's not going to be this fictitious or whatever. It's real. Be libertarian. Let life live. I mean, I love the branding and the thing. And he's 70 years old. Oh, right. My God. Ron
right,
Paul.
And people are still acting like he's the cool one. Right? Okay. Yeah. Good for you, dude.
I don't always run for president, but when I do, I make it cool. You know? So this is kind of the thing that, you know, I think you and I both have been waiting for a long time, to the Libertarian Party to take advantage of this dissent that's out there. And we're old enough to know better. A lot of the activists, you know, that went through this stuff, they may be in their 30s, but they're young enough to enjoy a good rave when it's there, you know? So this is going to be, it's a generational thing. And if not this election cycle, the next one or the next one or the next one, but we're developing so far decentralized past the man that I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, it's going to get darkest before the dawn, but, you know, I'm feeling pretty good. And your kids are at the right age that they may be coming out of this, going into adulthood, you know, building the society that we've been hoping for them.
Could be.
I think so. You know, your kids are doing awesome, and you guys are you having fun, James? I mean, that's a big thing.
Yeah, well, that is the key. And, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about as well. I mean, what an exciting time. New tools coming around, new things happening, decentralized capabilities, communications.
Hey, have you seen the flyboard? You know, the Iron Man flyboard?
No, what is that?
Oh, hell yeah! I'm going to go Flyboard Test 1. I'm going to watch it with you when we get off here.
Cool.
Look it up right now. Flyboard Test 1. And you just pull it up right now, and we're going to watch it together, because I'm like, this is definitely going to be part of my presentation at Porkfest. And
I'm waiting for my self-driving car. That's going to be my...
They got video of guys on the highway in a Tesla sleeping going down the highway.
Bring it on. And he's probably safer than, like, any driver in Jersey.
Bring the secrets and expose it.
Yeah, no, that was funnier than shit. The guy, he's taking a bit. He's there. You know, he's in bump-and-go traffic. He's like, I just got on my autopilot.
Oh, I have seen this hydro-powered jet thing. Yeah.
No. Not the hydro-powered.
Okay. I Googled flyboard, and that's what
no,
I got.
No, it's flyboard test one.
Oh, here we go.
It's the same guy that invented that. Just watch it.
Safety's ready. He's got his fire extinguisher.
Right.
You know it's fun when you need guys with fire extinguishers around. Is that a carbon fiber helmet?
Just watch. Come on, man. Tell me this ain't cool.
It's the Green Goblin.
Right. Exactly. I didn't even think of that. You know? It's like Johnny Quest platform of whatever the hell. You know? And then he does another one where he went for the Guinness record.
What kind of missiles does it fire?
Right. I mean, don't laugh, man. You know the Pentagon's wanting to put, you know, a shoulder-mounted toe, whatever the hell, on it, you know? But
how long can it fly?
You know, I think the way the backpack is the fuel, and it's just a turbine, you know, jet engine. And
way these videos go, like, remember the jet pack from the 50s, you know? And they'd make these like films, and you'd see him like zipping all over the place. But each flight was like 20 seconds.
Right.
And he just
splices
it together.
Some other jet ones that are new ones that have a little bit more. But as I remember, it was 10, 20 minutes. But the big thing is this goes 10,000 feet.
Yeah, but you've only got 10 or 20 minutes of fuel.
Better get a freaking parachute, man.
Well, you know, maybe I'd say, you know, that might be the way to go. If you're going to fool around up that high, just have the parachute and fly till it kicks out and think of it as a skydiving platform, you know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. This just brings up all kinds of crap. See, the one thing is this, of course, is what he wanted, but he has the skill to be able to do on that water thing, so he's got the balance and all that kind of stuff. And he was saying, I was looking at other things, and they go, no, until you've mastered the flyboard with the water jets, you don't want to get on this. It would be my end.
Well, I put that in the same category as like those wingsuits. You know, it's right. Like, yeah, that looks awesome, and I'm really glad that people have a GoPro on their head when they do it, because there's no way in hell I'm doing it.
Right. Tell me all about it. You know, you can show me. You first. But it's just so many of these, and this is kind of the attitude that I'm getting from a lot of McAfee's videos, and so I'm really glad. It's McAfee, whatever. I don't care. It's just the manifestation of this kind of stuff. Oh. And he's 70 years old. I mean, keep in mind, was he a couple years younger than what Ron Paul was when he started the 08 campaign? I mean, you know, this is, and it's a whole different thing. And he's, you know, I have, seven girlfriends of whatever, and I married the sex worker, black girl from the kind of, you know, and now what are you going to get me on? I mean, you know,
Right, he just owns it all. He's like, it doesn't seem to have anything to hide, unless that's the really cool stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to get a dose. I'm probably going to be, I don't know what to expect. You know, you stay at his condo and it's going to be God knows what, you know, but, I'm hip. I'm, you know, kind of just weathered.
I think it's bring your own coke and hookers. I don't know.
Well, he's saying he's not he doesn't use drugs anymore. He hasn't for decades.
That's why you got to bring your own. So,
right. you know, plus, yeah, I'm going to try and be aware. You know, I'm going to have work to do. I got to take, because it's that I'm against the next war banner thing. That's going to be taking up a lot of my time. At least I got something to do. You know,
have you ever seen Gary Johnson's book, The Seven Principles of Good Government or something like that?
There are good government.
You got to check out this book. I've only seen an excerpt from it, okay? It will break your heart, okay? It will break your heart. And then put these seven principles next to Harry Brown's seven never-to-be-forgotten principles of government, okay?
Yeah.
And I know your feelings about Harry Brown, but what a compare and contrast. Like,
Harry Brown was not. As time went on, I learned to appreciate him more, but... It wasn't just him.
But compare and contrast these messages. And because Gary is like, you know what? He says stuff like, you know, libertarian principles are great, but when you mix it with a dose of common sense, real world governance, you know, we can do great things. I'm like, whoa. Like, yeah, a dose of real world governance. Like, to me, that is like him in a nutshell. Like we're going to really rule you right.
You know, one thing.
It's not going to be that kind of ruling. We're going to do our kind of ruling.
Right.
It's awesome.
We're going to do it better with high tech stuff, you know, with implants. You know, one thing McAfee said, he goes, you know, when I spend any time with Gary, you know, he's, you know, pleasant enough and whatever, but at the end of the experience, I just feel apathetic, you know.
He should be a Republican candidate. He would be the best Republican candidate out there.
Best
of that group instead of being, you know, just a sort of a sad, you know, figure in another group.
Oh, did you hear the debate I did with Austin Peterson and Daryl Perry? Do you even know about that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I listened to that. I'm trying to remember, you know.
Bunk. You know, Austin is so McAfee.
You know what I kind of remember about it? Look, you were chomping at the bit so hard It's like, because like Daryl wasn't smacking him hard enough.
I'm huge.
You're like, I have to Internet get in here troll. And get some smacks in too, because this is just, this can't go on.
Well, I was just like, I'm going to go, Ernie, what are you? I go, hey man, I don't even have an opinion. I don't want to, you know, I'll tell you. I'm
well, I know you wanted to be impartial, but I could see you were just.
Oh no. By the third segment, I'm just like, all right, fine. You asked for it, you know? And, but his take on is he read the tea leaves wrong. And it's these guys that are inside, you know, he obviously spent too much time inside Fox Studios. And it's, you know, looking at polling data of we're going to, and they don't understand that all it takes is one viral video. It's just one outside-the-box concept that you took your freaking tie off and, you know, something happened and you did something. You went, we're going to build and do and we'll have a better, our collective will beat their collective against collectivism. I mean, you know, I'm like, this mindset is just so lost on me. And come to find out, there's a lot of guys like you and I that, you know, understand the power of decentralized, spontaneous order of, you know, here it comes. And you just, you know, practice meets opportunity. And then when the opportunity comes, you take advantage of it. So I'm, is it this year? It's hard for me not to see, because I've been screaming 2016 forever. And I'm going, yeah, I can see it's going to, but what's going to change? It's going to be some number of the computer said. Where I go, nah, it's going to be a change in the opinion of people that their number doesn't mean shit. And I go, when that happens, then you got change. And economics around the world is going to hit, is going to make everybody see what's up. And there's going to be this dismantling of borders and boundaries. And what do we get that from? The Matrix. You know, I hear you now. You know, I
right.
feel
and
you.
You know what? And even if President Trump built a wall, that wall will mean less than the fence does today. If, you know, if we can, you know, have commerce tools that can transcend and bypass this damage. Right. So, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what are you seeing the change? I mean, you're, you know, living life and working and looking for something to do. I mean, you know, where are you seeing the biggest change?
Well, I think self-driving vehicles. If this would be the revolution that sort of changes our culture dramatically as internet or printing press or, you know, the crossbow, you know, so disruptive though, you know, I feel like I may see it, you know, in time to take advantage of it, or it could be so disruptive that it's delayed for another generation or two.
You know, I saw on, I think it's on today. It'll be on Freedom's Feed. I got to take a look. I sent it to staff to put up. It was an article on Joe Hedge or something. And it was the breakdown of the most numerous or popular or highest average salary, whatever, of jobs in each state. And truck driver was like number one in 40 states. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I'm going, wow. Well, they're done.
well, you know what? But it actually is going to, or could allow each one of those drivers
to own their damn truck and sit
at home.
Control
10 trucks. Okay. Yeah. Think of it in terms of not like firing truck drivers. Think of it as giving each driver 10 trucks of productivity. And these guys, you know, most truckers that I've ever known are sort of independent owners, right? Like that, you know. So, I mean, those guys especially are going to increase their productivity. You know what? Imagine like, yeah, I used to drive a truck, never see my kids. Now my truck drives around the country and I play with my kids. Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, all right, you know, have a double trailer and I live in one of them and I'm watching TV while we're doing down the road.
right. It's I relax in this studio suite and I just make sure the paperwork is all signed at the other end. You know,
no, I'm with you, brother. I can see, but it is disruptive. I mean, it is going to happen.
It is so disruptive, and it is so that you know, I don't know what kind of obstacles that's going to throw in the path. Or how the technology will work around that, but you never know.
Like, well, I tell you where the big, you know, advantage is going to be in what you just said. We were back in Norfolk a few weeks ago, and my relative, I was a uncle of my wife, her mother's brother, and he was interested. I was doing Freemus Phoenix. Oh, what's this and what's that? And I go, well, you want to see Centennial? He goes, yeah, well, all I care about, when they got self-driving car, then I go, really? Well, they already got them. And I started showing him stuff. And then he goes, are you freaking kidding me? How much is this? And I go, well, you know, Tesla wants to sell this Model 3 for, you know, for $35,000. And you get a car done. Kind of goes, oh, my God. I'd pay more for that my last car and a good hell yet. So they were all excited because they're getting older and they're, you know, having problems seeing, you know, they aren't as quick on the reflexes. They, you know, to find the place or be able to see the freaking signs, you know, to have this opportunity and it being that close and already done, man, you could see him lose like 10 years, you know, just in his eyes. He's like, wow, because they're looking at my father and mother-in-law, they're starting to have problems. They got lost for like an hour, got off on the wrong exit, have got to find and kind of, and they don't have a smartphone, and they can't really, well, we had the GPS, but you know, we couldn't figure out the yet. So I'm going, look, man, just get a freaking self-driving car and be done. You get another 10 years.
Yeah, imagine how great that would be. Or, you know, for people that are visually impaired that would never be able to operate a car otherwise. Imagine this sudden, like, leap of freedom to so many people.
A story today. A guy, a quadriplegic, is going 158 miles an hour in a Corvette around a track.
And we won't ask how he became a quadriplegic.
Right. Yeah, you know.
Because he likes to drive Corvettes at 150 miles an hour. Yeah.
Oh, it's happening. I'm so glad that your kids, my grandchildren or so on, are going to benefit. They're going to see. They're going to learn. They're going to know. And having a dad and mom like you guys, you know, that would be awesome, you know, to go, damn, they never appreciate it until later, you know. And I tell you when it starts, it's about 23, you know. And certainly after they have, you know, they start thinking about getting married and, yeah, dad, what do you think? You know, they're going to start coming back. About mid-20s, they're all like, okay, dad, you know, wasn't as crazy as we thought, you know, during the puberty years. But as long as you know that, I was patient. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I want to strangle you when you're 17, 18. But, you know, I'm over here. You're 18 now. Pace. Let me know how it works out. So I'm looking forward to it. I think we got a really bright future. But it's going to get dark. I mean, how's the economic war situation affecting you? You seeing anything of interest or are you just ignoring it?
Well, say that again.
You know, the war and the economy and the dollar and the eventual here it comes and crashing of whatever. Are you paying attention or care?
You know, I've never been any good at predictions. So, you know, I just try to, something Ben Stone, like always part of one of his like recurring themes was profit from the failures of government, like as a as sort of a hedge.
Yeah.
on government intervention.
You can always count on short government.
There's so many opportunities just to do that. So no matter how ridiculous they get, there's always more opportunities to help people work around that damage.
You know, there's one guy here, he's a big political Republican guy, his friend, and he says when 9/11 happened, and the first thing he did is he went and bought a bunch of military-industrial complex stock. He goes, I know what they're going to do. So he went and bought, and he made bank. He came out ahead. And I go, yeah. And now you look at some of these guys that are investing in decentralized crypto, encrypted of whatever, bite me stuff, and their return is like gazillions of percent. So I've been having all these guys on, and I'll buy, you know, $100 of this and $100 of that and $100, whatever. What do I do? $100 of that in Bitcoin. I just diversify myself. And last time I checked, I was up 30%. You know, and I mean, it was, I didn't put enough into, you know, like retire on, but you know, you never know. Some of these are going to be, you know, go stupid. And so I'm investing in the future and mostly with just education and spending time with grandkids. And I'm going, hey, man, you know, there's like been, you know, a lot of tech gurus and NFL players that, you know, like bought their grandparents' houses. I just want you to know that, you know. I helped you. You know what I mean? Come on, man. A little for the home team here. So, yeah, we'll see where the investment goes in the kids. I'm looking forward to seeing you at Pork Fest. When are you going to arrive? On the previous weekend or Wednesday or what?
We'll be there for the full week. I forget. We set up on the Sunday, I guess. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. I'm not really thrilled with the kicking Ian out situation though. So
yeah, I'm not even really sure. They gave Derek J, I think, the equipment to do it. They wanted me to go ahead and do the show, and so I'm not really sure how is that. I didn't get the feeling that he was emotionally abandoned by anybody. It's just like, you know, we have voted in the best interest of something. I don't even know.
Whatever. What you know on. What? But the bottom line is, I didn't feel like, you know, that it would. I just didn't. It didn't seem right to me, and I didn't want to sort of. I don't know. I was wondering if you were going to do your show, you know, or maybe. Maybe it's better to have, maybe we could get separate equipment for your show where you could, you know, like instead of sort of like, you know, we're just going to try to make sure nobody notices Ian's missing, you know, like still do the shows or, you know, I don't know.
Well, I have my equipment and they wanted me to bring, but it's like a $5,000 little Comrex of where do I leave and who's going to, and I get that and everybody,
you know what,
gets to use.
Say I can bring it for $7,000, you know, like because they've got tons of money and you know what, it's not like they should. Why should you, you know, give charity to help mitigate the decision to boot Ian?
Well, you know, my thing was, is I didn't, you know, I, you know, who's going to pay for it when it gets messed up? You know, who's taking responsibility? And I'm like, no. So then they got it worked out. Well, Ian worked out something to where they're getting it equipped to do. I you know, I don't know enough about, I mean, I know kind of basically what happened, but I saw that Ian got support from when the FBI did their framing BS bullshit, that, you know, everybody came together, I thought, and kind of support. So that was good. And it was kind of about the same time. So it doesn't look like he lost friends. But I see their, you know, whatever. It's what happens when you get a collective, you know.
Well, the, you know, the Freedom Fiends were offered free tickets. If you come and do the show, you get free Pork Fest tickets, but you're not allowed to display any LRN banners. And I was like, you know, I'll just pay for my ticket, you know, like, I, you know, why would I be forbidden to bring an LRN banner? Like, seriously, like LRN, like one of the most like effective tools for, you know, spreading the message of liberty that's like ever existed. And really, that's no.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I didn't even really talk. I did talk to Ian about it and what the deal was, but he didn't take it too. No one too worried about it.
He's been very gracious, right? Like, he's been like, oh, everybody should still go to Pork Fest, and I still think everyone should move to New Hampshire, and, you know, and that's cool and whatever. You know, he's very gracious, but that doesn't, I don't think that, I don't know, I still think there's a, I don't know, I guess I respect loyalty, you know, and it just seems like a lack of loyalty and throwing a team member under the bus for, I don't know. People say there's reasons, but I haven't seen anything, you know.
Well, the big thing, this is what it's what happens when you have collectives. I mean, you got an organization that becomes, I mean, this is a perfect example of the organization became more important than the reason they created it.
I agree completely. I mean, and it's, you know, I told you about my experience at Liberty Forum. I went to Liberty Forum this year.
Yeah.
And if you've been to Liberty Forum, right? The wintertime free state thing.
Yeah, I spoke there.
Well, I went this year because Ed Snowden was doing a Skype thing.
Right.
And I thought, oh, this would be really cool. Dorothy was like, hey, can we go? Can we go? And I'm like, okay, let's go. So we went, and the Ed Snowden thing was really awesome and everything. And oh, Derek Slopey was there and Donna Slopey and, you know, a few like, you know, awesome folks. But I'm like, there's like a cocktail party, and I'm like, people are walking around with their badges on. Like, I'm a state representative, you know, like they're like, you know, they're getting special jewelry to like adorn themselves. like I could see where this is going.
Shiny,
you know,
badge. Like, look at my shiny badge. I got a shiny badge.
Yeah, it's become a shiny badge culture. Literally.
Shiny badger.
Like at a cocktail party. I'm like, that's, you know, and I'm like, I respect a lot of those guys. Like Amanda Bolden, you know, I think she does really cool stuff. And I'm not faulting them, but I just noticed the accoutrements, you know, were different. I'm like, this is not Pork Fest. This is definitely a different vibe.
Yeah, so. No, it definitely. Yeah, and it's kind of the, yeah, I, you know, it'll go the way of all such collective efforts of we going to package it and brand it and
right. Well,
sell
when
a t-shirt.
When you look at the, what's the guy's name that's in charge of the Free State Project now?
No.
I'm drawing a blank. But he has as his own political pack. And if you look at this political pack, you can see it's a, you know, it's a conservative agenda, you know, get a conservatives elected, you know, political organization, right? So you can, it totally lays out like sort of what his direction. So, you know, I guess that's what he, you know, that's what he has in mind for the Free State Project, to just, to, you know, support a conservative, you know, I'm like, okay.
So he's head of the Free State Project and he's got a pack about electing conservatives?
You know, I don't want to, you know, that was the impression I got. I forget what it's called, but could Google it. And
I was always, you know, by having people even move there and just being libertarian and voluntarist, leave me aloneist of whatever, that is the change. And they don't appreciate that. You know, I mean, I don't mind, you know, you working on legislation as an educational kind of, you know, whatever the hell, but I'm just, nah, if that's the goal is to be, you know, now I'm in charge, I'm just not hip, you know? I just
like Porkfest for the party and for the, you know, for the interaction with everybody that goes there. And, you know, what else goes on, you know, with these people really doesn't concern me. But I don't want them to screw up, you know, what I consider to be like the, you know, the funnest week of the year. So.
Yeah.
Just don't screw up Porkfest and do whatever you want.
You know, I had Taryn Lupo on last week talking about, you know, the Porkfest. And he's of the opinion that, you know, there's a lot of things to go to and there's a lot of activities and fun and stuff. But I don't know. It'll be different now that they've got their 20,000, you know, signer-ups and the move has started. And they're going to be pushing the move thing. And I'm wondering if they, yeah, but we got our numbers, we got the trigger, we got the, so we don't need Ian and his rabble-rousing anarchist activist Keeniac kind of thing.
Well, right, because those guys are in the way of getting some big money from conservative political factions, right?
Oh.
I don't know, you know, like.
Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, that's
well,
kind
oh,
of
those
result.
Pesky anarchists and their, and they're, you know, ignoring the state kind of thing. You know, the funny thing is Ian is always supportive of their candidates, right? Like, for as supportive as an anarchist can be, you know, so it just still doesn't. But just the, I just think that's just that extremism of like, you know, it's just sort of like, you know what, those people that want too much freedom are the enemy. So let's separate. And, you know, maybe it's better to just be able to just let people go their own direction, let them pursue a conservative, you know, political thing. If that works for them, great. And let the other people do their thing. So I don't care.
Yeah, and no, I like the tapestry. There's been, I tell you, you know, in my years of activism, it always started like Libertarian Party. We called it the Liberty Nexus, where everybody went to meet so they could go actually learn to do some real activism. And they went off and did a lot of things, and a lot of opportunities come up. I mean, you know, that, everything. There's always an opportunity. There's been 15 gazillion opportunities for, you know, revolutionary kind of whatever. And I see a bunch more coming because of the ability to fund it. Because if somebody's got a little bit, I remember $200 or $2,000 is going to change the planet if I had to whatever, which is why I'm a soft touch for a lot of these guys. Like, you know, Drew's effort and everything. He knows that if it's cool and I get a little logo or something on it, you know, it's worth $100 in Bitcoin, you know. I'm like, all right, you know, go make it go work. And as we get further along in this revolution, there's going to be more and more opportunities. I'm just hoping that it's not going to be from, you know, to fund a conservative election of we rule you now kind of thing. I'm really opposed to that mentality. So
those people are always there, right? Like, it doesn't really matter, like, you know, like whether they're, you know, what they call themselves, or like, we've always seen that kind of faction, right? That's like sort of nipping at the heels of libertarian organizations, right? Like, I don't know, you know.
No, every one of them.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, it's always our collective to beat up the other collective against collectivism. I mean, I'm going, wow, I'm looking for the people that use their activism as part of a much larger understanding of just public opinion. So I've seen a lot of that. It's just not as, you know, obvious to many, because whenever they do get a lot of people, look, we could take this and turn it into We Rule You Collective if we got the bigger, badder something. And I'm going, yeah, see, you're missing the point. You know, so anyway, that's what I'm kind of hoping will happen, and I'm seeing a lot of good evidence of it. But, you know, this McAfee thing is just interesting to me because
he's stirring the pot. He's stirring the pot. And seriously, compared to the other, you know, I don't want to even say leading candidates, but compared to Johnson and
Peterson,
right? He actually sounds the most libertarian of any of them. He's willing to start to say stuff like about the non-aggression principle and why it's great, instead of trying to explain why he's against it.
Yeah, you know, I'm going, yeah, you're the poster child for libertarian,
you know,
lifestyle.
And he might not be perfect, and he's, you know, is on his own like personal path of development, and you know, I'm not sure exactly what stage he's at, but he seems like he's quickly, you know, becoming, you know, or maybe he's finally putting some of the pieces together, like actually making progress, where I feel like, you know, Gary Johnson has had plenty of time to learn about libertarianism, right? If he had a slightest bit of interest, wouldn't he have like cracked a little Rothbard or tuned into Freedom's Phoenix or maybe a Tom Woods podcast from time to time? Like, but no.
Who are you talking about? Peterson?
Gary Johnson.
Johnson. You know, yeah. Well, both of them the same. They're attracting another. I know what they're looking at. They're looking at Coke money. They're looking at, you know, the conservative of we traditional of where's the cash of I'll be your bitch. And I'm not. And I could tell Johnson was going down that road when he started doing this. Oh, we have a tax of this kind of different tax. And I'm going, why would you advocate? Why would you even bring what? Who's paying your bills?
Well, he's explained why. Did you know why his tax is better? Because nobody can avoid this one. I kid you not. This is a libertarian libertarian like selling point. Like, oh yeah, this is going to be an unavoidable tax.
Yeah.
Which team are you on, dude?
All right. Well, I got to get doing all my crap and get ready tomorrow morning. You know, Kokesh came by. He stayed over last night. You know, getting ready to early this morning hit the airport. Him and Macy be at. In Orlando tonight, and I ain't even called Star Child yet. I should call him, let him know I'm coming. I'd be interested to see where, because he's getting inside the machine too. I want to hear, you know, kind of his take on some stuff. It'll be interesting to see where he's going.
Oh yeah, wish him well for me. I, you know, like not getting to see him is one reason. You know, I mean, seeing him would be one reason I would go to the convention. You know. So.
You know, he's getting all traditional, man. I don't know. I gotta, you know, we're gonna have him on. Maybe I,
I sent I sent Daryl a little Bitcoin for his beer fund. I'm like, well, I can't bring beer, but here's buy some beer.
So, yeah, no, I told him I'd help him out.
Wishing, you know, it'd be interesting if somehow like they discover libertarianism in this crowd, and suddenly people like remember, like, oh, that's right, we're supposed to be libertarians and get it, and we can be excited about libertarianism instead of explaining why it won't work.
Thank you. Well, I know what's happened. McAfee, because I talked to him in like October when he decided he was going to run, but he didn't know anything. And I'm just going, you know, I don't think you get it. You're going to need $10 million just to get on the ballot. I mean, I hope you understand this. You know, that's it. So I didn't even push the libertarian thing because I knew he was eventually going to find it anyway. So when he finally did that, I'm going, okay, so now he's got, well, what happened was when you talk to him, he's like, holy shit. I didn't know this philosophy was all vetted out and kind of doing the prop deal. Damn, where the hell y'all been, man? Who's hiding your light under the rock? What happened with that? You want everybody to know? I'll show everybody what you know. This is Gary, you know, Johnson BS. We're going to go kick some ass. Right. I'm like, okay, now we're talking. Let's go have some fun. So that's what I've been waiting on. We'll see what happens. But I'm glad Daryl was doing what he was doing. He gets props from me for doing that. And I talked to McAfee about that. He likes Daryl, you know, so that worked out well. All right, man. Thanks for hanging with me.
Hey, thank you, Ernie. Always great to talk with you. Look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Yeah, we may do a show before then, kind of talk, you know, going into and rehashing, you know, the LP convention and everything. I like talking to you because, you know, you kind of have the, you know, see what's what, you know. And then, of course, I'm going to need somebody to help me watch all the videos.
Oh, please don't punish me.
Yeah, really. All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you later. Say hey to everybody.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.